This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Come on, Eric. Come on. We call it the place to be.
The place to be, yes.
The place to be.
Then I shall be.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Crisola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
It is contagious. It is the place to be, and we are live each and every Monday.
To do worse than Josh Richard.
Me and my girl, we got this relationship. I love her so bad, but she treats me like shit. Unlocked down like a penitentiary.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to a great episode of the one and only Place to Be Podcast. Same co-host, Justin Rosero, with you live here on this Monday evening inside PTBN Studios. And joining me, as always, for the 498th time is my PIC, Mr. Scott Crisola. Scott, how are you?
Good evening, JR, as we get close to the finish line. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to episode, 498 of the longest episodic motherfucking goal bender. And actually, JR, as per what could be a trivia question soon, or maybe not, 496 of the 498. If maybe people can remember the two.
That's correct.
One I was not on, one you were not on.
There you go.
And then there's the episode that's floating around in Cyberville.
Anyway, Kevin Kelly's cloud. That episode.
Yeah.
The lost episode.
Kelly's cloud. It's cloud.
Yeah, it is. But it is episode 498, Scott, and just a month away from episode 500.
Yes.
I guess we'll mention it now, of course, and again later. But we are doing a trivia contest, and there are quite a few entrants. But there's still time to join. You can join between now and episode 499 in 2 weeks. That'll be the deadline for signups. Once we hit 499, we're not going to take any more signups. Because we have to prep how many questions we need and everything else. So you got 2 more weeks to sign up if you want in on the trivia contest on September 24th, the Monday night. You need Skype, and you need to be free that night and have plenty of free time on that night because it may take a while to work through that. So, Scott, why don't we go ahead and bring our guest in tonight?
Yes.
And I think it's fitting because our guest tonight and then on next week, we're at 498, 499. And I think it's really cool that our two guests are like kind of two of the OG fans and readers and listeners. They go way back, and the guy here tonight, you read him every Monday at PlayStation.com with his Vintage Vault previewing. He takes part in the live Group Watch Champions group stuff, and you've seen, of course, his box office pieces. He does a lot. He's done a lot. He's been around since the start. I think the message board, even before the podcast, he was with us. That is the one and only Mr. Steve Riddle. Steve, how are you?
Hey, guys. It's great to be here. And yes, we go back way back to the old message board, to the almost to the caveman days, essentially.
Yeah. How did you find us? Was it through Graham's site, or how did you stumble on the message board?
It was when I was in college. I think this was in either 05 or 06. I was perusing Graham's site, and I noticed that there was like a little subsection for reviews. So I clicked on there and just perusing some of the reviews guys had posted, and I happened to stumble upon your guys' reviews. I enjoyed reading them, and then eventually saw on one of them had the link to the message board, and rest is history.
Wow, 2006. Can you believe that? Oh, my God.
And he was in college. God, that was like 30 years after you graduated.
Exactly. My God. There was no message boards. It was pigeons when I was in college.
Well, it's good to have you.
It was when
Steve.
Valerie was on 90210 when I was in college. That's how far I'm doing.
Oh, boy. Really? I wouldn't have thought
of that. Your
girl
Valerie.
Okay. Yeah. Well, more on 90210 to come this week.
Yeah,
that's true. Stay tuned for that.
But,
Steve, it is good to have you here. Like I said, it's pretty cool that as we near 500, which is obviously a pretty special episode for me and Scott, it's great to have one of the originals here with us tonight. So, but we do have quite the road to hoe ahead of us, Scott.
Yeah. This is a Pete Shermock special tonight.
Oh, boy.
Anyway, Steve, pleasure. And what you did walk in on is kind of a – I always – and I'm gonna talk about this a lot tonight. I feel it's odd, although this wasn't really a show per se. It was kind of a big local show that – that the WWF pretty much just taped and meant to use as pieces for the Cindies is pretty much what they did. But we treat it as a big show, and it was promoted on a VHS tape as such. Mm-hmm. And but we're going to go through it in full tonight. That show is WrestleFest. No, not SummerFest, and no, not the WWF game that what was it on JR?
Was it
N64?
No, it was the arcade game.
Yeah, it was arcade.
Yeah, the arcade.
Yeah.
And I think they did a WrestleFest on Nintendo? The
no.
first one? Maybe not. I guess it was just the video game.
Arcade. Of course, it's also the WCF special.
Well, yeah. Now, if we did that, Steve Riddle would be all over it, and he would have to
do
preview the entire show for PlayStation.com. Because you can't find one unstellar match on that show. Anyway, the date is actually only a week after we had our house show, JR.
Mm-hmm.
Our house was July 25th.
Yep.
That previous Monday at the Garden. This is July 31st, so it's a Sunday. Sunday night, July 31st, 1988, from County Stadium in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Milwaukee.
Home of Milwaukee, as Alice Cooper said, and was it the second Wayne's World? Home of the Brew Crew, the Milwaukee Brewers at the time, and I believe still in 88, I think the Packers played like two home games there a year.
Mm-hmm.
I think in 88 they still were. So,
and so we've talked about this before. I believe we did it on the podcast, Scott, way back. And we also did a written review of it at PlayStation.com. But this is kind of exclusive because it's actually we watched the full show. One of our great listeners out there, Brain Fowler at PWO, Pro Wrestling Only Community, was kind enough to cobble this thing together. It is every match that occurred. Some aired on primetime, some aired on just DVD, and some aired on the tape, you know, and some on 24/7 when they ran that version. So it's like just this hacked together version that he was kind enough to put together for us. And that's what we're using tonight. So we watched all 15 matches on this fucking thing. And it was interesting because we were talking about how like just long and bloated the show was, and I really apologize. I meant to mark down who noted this when we were talking about it in the live chat, but someone had commented that they did the show purposely because Crockett, I believe, was running like 2 days later or the next day or something like that, and they put on purposely this long, dragged-out show to try and burn out the crowd from wanting to go the next night, so I vaguely remembered the story when we saw it. I apologize to whoever it was that said it. But I am curious about, you know, validity around that. But it sounds very much like something they would do in 1988. So it doesn't
Absolutely.
Surprise me. I'm
going to
check Graham's site real quick in 88 and see if there was a show, if he hasn't noted it.
Yeah,
in
I was
Milwaukee.
Yep, I was actually looking as well. So maybe one of us will get to it and see. Let's see here.
So
So it was a Sunday, just to recap.
Yeah, actually, yep, there were August 1st, JCP at Milwaukee in the Mecca. They had a card. So, yeah, so there you go. Vince trying to burn out the crowd. Burned me out. I wouldn't want to go watch another fucking show, so he did a good job. Steve, had you ever seen this whole version?
Have you seen this whole show, Steve?
Not the whole version. I did at one time a couple of years ago. For actually for the message board, I did a review of it, and I watched it in like bits and pieces. Like I know on YouTube somebody had posted the Coliseum video copy, which obviously is the chopped up version of the show, and then I just found the other matches through various avenues. And this was before the network, so it took a lot of searching to find all this stuff. But
so you saw you've seen all the matches though.
I have seen them, okay. But it's been a while for a couple of them, so. But yeah, I literally actually watched the whole show entirely for the first time today, and it was a chore to get through.
Yeah, it was not easy. All right, so why don't we dig in, because it is going to probably take a while. So a few notes here from our repository. The July 30th, 88 episode of Superstars, really the only thing that happened between that MSG and here, like you mentioned, Scott. Craig DeGeorge conducted an interview with Randy Savage and Miss Elizabeth. Savage announced that Hulk Hogan would be a tag team partner at SummerSlam against Andre the Giant and Ted DiBiase. That was Hogan's first appearance since April. And Hogan made it clear that Elizabeth was now going to manage both of them. And of course, Scott, we talked about how the fans in New York kind of got that news early at that show that we talked about where they announced it. And then, of course, it came out on TV. In an update segment, they released the entire card for SummerSlam. So, again, that was announced at MSG and then on TV.
Yep.
And in his first appearance in 13 months, the Iron Sheik is back, defeated Scott Casey. So I don't think we see him again, but there he is.
We may see him very quickly. Anyway, quick run through. This is what you would have gotten if you went to the Mecca. Maybe the undercard's a little shaky. Dick Murdoch defeats the Russian Assassin. Jimmy Garvin defeats Rick Steiner. Al Perez defeats Kendall Windham. Larry Zbyszko beats Tim Horner. Yeah, I would have left. Bugsy McGraw defeated Rip Morgan. Ricky Morton and Brad Armstrong defeated the Sheepherders. Who were they? Bobby Fulton and Tommy Rogers defeated the NWA U.S. Tag Team Champions, the Midnight Express, in a non-title bunkhouse match. Your TV champion, former U.S. Express member Mike Rotundo, defeated Nikita Koloff. And the main event, I don't know, JR, about this main event, though. Dusty, Lex, Sting, and the Road Warriors beat Flair, the other half of the U.S. Express, Barry Windham. So the U.S. Express, who we had on our earlier shows, are both singles champions in Crockett. And the World Tag Team Champions, Tully and Arn and JJ in War Games.
There you go.
So that was the main event. So if you show, so you know what, take a nap and show up late, and then maybe you've been all right.
And the night before in Detroit, the Sheik actually wrestled. They had him team with Dusty against Kevin Sullivan and Dick Murdoch in a cage. So that was the evening before this, the night of WrestleFest. So there you go.
So speaking of Scott Casey, though, JR, yes. we hop right in.
Sheik Adnan-Al Scott Casey is here. interesting show. Again, this week's before SummerSlam, this huge stadium show. And to start, we have Sean Mooney, Lord Al Hayes, and superstar Billy Graham. Of course, that'll change a lot for us due to the way this was cobbled together. We have the original commentary. Then we have some with just Mooney and Al. We have Michael Cole and Mick Foley call one match. So we're all over the place, and we'll call that out as we get to each one, because some are from prime time. So our commentary will be a mixed bag this eve. All right, so let's go to our opener. Scott Casey taking on the Big Boss Man, wasting no time with the showcase here. Boss Man continues to work up the ladder, notching win after win. Tonight he faces the feisty Scott Casey in a rematch from June MSG. Al puts over how imposing Boss Man is, and of course I think his swagger is impressive. We have just Al and Mooney in this one. Boss Man shows off his power and size early while Casey tries to stick and move where he can. Casey's able to wrangle the arm and work it a bit before Boss Man cuts him off with a backbreaker. Boss Man keeps battering the back as Mooney reminds us that he'll battle Coco Beware at SummerSlam. Boss Man hooks a bear hug as Casey bites free and grabs a sloppy sleeper. Boss Man eats a boot on a charge and comes back with a side slam for the win. Boss Man smacks Casey with his nightstick after, and I thought the crowd was engaged here. It was fine as a squash to get the ball rolling, but it was a little bit a tick behind what we saw at MSG in June. Scott, the one you and I and Stacey had talked about, which I preferred, but this one was okay too. Boss Man stays hot. I went one star here.
Your opening time, 4:15. Oh, yeah, I gave this a star. I mean, we're going to get a lot of this tonight, so there's going to be a lot of matches that really won't have that much meat and potatoes to talk about. And it was evident, obviously, that this show was put together, again, for the most part, for the Cindies, whether it was prime time or maybe, you know, challenge highlights or superstar highlights. Other than that, if you went to the show live, I would have been really pissed for the most part. I'm sure there was a lot of beer and cheese flowing and, a lot of brats going through the crowd that night. You're going to get a lot of this. I'm digging the Boss Man as a character. He's a good heel. Scott Casey's just Scott Casey. He's that, like, one notch above full-blown jobber. So it adds a little intrigue, but for the most part, Steve, I think pretty much all the way, this was a full-blown win for Boss Man to keep that character rolling.
Yeah, I can't disagree with you on that one. I unfortunately was not as generous as you. Guys, I gave it half a star, which is half a star more than would have been, considering according to history of WWE, originally it was supposed to be Jerry Allen match against the Boss Man.
Well, that would have been a dud.
So, yeah, God knows what that would have been like. Boss Man looked really good. Crowd, yeah, you're surprisingly hot for Casey. They even chanted for him a little bit, which kind of threw me for a loop. But
they don't have very good taste in Wisconsin. That's been proven.
Yeah, or maybe, like Scott said, the beer was flowing heavy that night. You can definitely tell that they saw Boss Man as a guy that they could use for the future. I don't know if they were yet sure what they were going to do with him. I mean, still has no manager, so I think they're still kind of figuring out what to do with him. But I thought this was a decent enough spot for him, give him a big showcase win on a big show like this. And kind of weird, though, that the end where he, instead of handcuffing him to the rope, he just laid the cuffs on him. That just seemed kind of weird. Maybe it was just a way to make a statement. But
I guess, yeah.
But yeah, it was what it was. Gave Bossman a good win, and he definitely seems on the fast track to becoming one of the top heels of the company.
Yeah, they're definitely pushing him as such, and you know, by picking up wins like this and getting showcased, and we'll probably, you know, writing's on the wall for SummerSlam, right? I don't see him going toe to toe with Coco. I'm sure it'll be something similar. So yes, that seems to be where we're headed. And honestly, based off of this match, I was kind of settling in. I'm like, okay, this, you know, move it along. The crowd's fired up. We're gonna buzz through this show, and you know, so all right. I was cautiously optimistic after that opener. We will see. So our second match is Brutus the Barber Beefcake taking on the Mighty Hercules, who was just really in the waning days here as a heel, and you could tell. So Beefcake comes out. He's got brand new theme music. So there you go. That's debuted for him. The crowd is digging it. And now we have Gorilla Monsoon and Bobby Heenan on commentary. Is this aired on TV? And that's where this was pulled from, I believe, from primetime.
Yes.
So that's where that is. So that's why we have Gorilla and Bobby on the stick. Bobby digs on the Brewers and Bob Uecker. We get some stalling and antics until the two lock up. Gorilla talks about beef for his big IC title match at SummerSlam as the crowd rallies the Barber. Beefcake controls as he lands more strikes and slugs Hercules to the floor. Gorilla puts over Herc as a powerhouse as we restart with a tie-up. Beefcake keeps hammering away until Herc yanks him to the floor to cut him off. Bobby talks about his SummerSlam after party as this edges along. We take a break on primetime as Bobby mocks a fat Wisconsin woman, and then we head back where Hercules has a chin lock on. Beefcake battles out. Bobby says Honky has beaten Beefer at every turn. Herc slugs Beefcake down and goes back to a chin lock. Beefcake elbows out and starts to knife through Herc, clobbering him with a clothesline to a pop. Herc survives a flurry and gets a full Nelson, but Beefer runs out into the corner to break it and grabs a sleeper. Herc wriggles free and Beefer shoves him to the corner, rolls him up for the win and the big pop. Pretty boring overall, I thought. It kind of trudged along. Hercules really seems to be losing steam, like I mentioned earlier. Beefcake's on the come up and is improving, but this was really too slow and basic. Never quite got heated. And you could tell that Herc is really starting to fade because he's not a guy that usually takes clean losses like this, unless it's against like Hogan or whatever. So he just gets rolled up and pinned pretty easily after the fight. So you would, writing's on the wall that he's putting some guys over, and then we're going to have some changes with Herc. So I want a star and a half on this one, Steve.
Yeah, it was. I liked it a little bit more than you did. I went two. It's low two, but still a two. Give the crowd credit. They were red hot for Beefcake, and they were into him, you know, through his entrance and his comeback, and they popped pretty big for him when he won. So you can definitely tell that he was. It seemed like he was on the cusp, considering that he had his IC title match coming in the month. That it seemed that he was ready to get that title. And yeah, Hercules, God, talk about a fall from grace, man. It just, you know, early in the year, he was, you know, had the feud with Warrior. He was still looking good. Now he's just aimless.
Yeah, he's definitely aimless. And, it was someone I had enjoyed, surprisingly, like throughout 1987, which had surprised me a lot, like the way he worked as a heel. But that's really kind of fallen off here in 88. We haven't had as much quality from him. I don't know. Was the Hogan match? Maybe when was that? Late 87? Was that? That might have been it for him. Because then, well, actually, no, we had that good Warrior one, right, Scott, earlier in the year?
Yeah. There was a good Warrior one at the Garden. What was it, April, I think?
Yeah, it was right after Mania.
Maybe. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So that might have been it for him as far as, you know, the quality stuff we've seen out of him, which is sad. We went 2.5 on that, Scott. And then he fought Doug Ennis during the event. That was not a. And I don't know if we've seen him since, actually. I don't think we have. We haven't until now. So, So what do you got, Scott?
Yeah, I gave it a star and a half, too. Your match time, 9:37, which felt like 59:37. I mean, this was definitely one of many matches on this night that really felt like a slog. And we had been impressed, JR, and Herc had really kind of stepped up and had some decent matches against certain guys, and Beefer got a crazy pop from this crowd. Definitely one of the most over faces in the on the roster right now. But this match never hit that third gear. It got to second gear, like at about the 6.5, 7 minute mark, but it never hit that last gear to really push it home. I couldn't even get it to 2 stars. And seeing Herc job clean tells you that something's on the horizon. I mean, he's too good a character to be booted, but obviously something's got to change. Incidentally, and Gorilla mentions it during the match, or maybe in one of the later matches, but he says 60,000 people are in this place. You don't see many wide shots, but it probably seats 60,000. But according to Graham, I think it was like 26,384 or something like that, about 26,000 in the building for this, which makes more sense when they showed a couple of wide shots of the building. I mean, you know, I know kayfabe is still live, and we can debate 93-68 at the Silver Dome, but you can't call this a sellout. Not at all. It's not even close. Still though, crowd's hot and for Beefer, he's a big favorite. You know, it just gets very flat and doesn't hit that gear that can take it to like 2, even 2.5 stars. So what ends up being, I wouldn't say a squash, but it's probably like a decent moderate squash for Beefer. And Herc is definitely on the horizon for something new. But Beefer's really hot, I tell you. And I got something to say when we get to a match later on pertaining to Beefcake and SummerSlam and his role and things like that. But I'll wait till we get to one of the later matches. But again, 1.5 stars for me. And as much as Beefer's hot and a big win for him, the match itself didn't deliver like it could have.
No, I agree. And I think part of that, again, is on Beefcake just developing as a face and Herc just slowing down in his role. All right, up next we get some tag action as the Killer Bees take on the Fabulous Rougeau Brothers. Big boos for the Rougeaus as they come out with their flags. We're back to Mooney and Al, and now Superstar Graham is in the booth as well. Crowd all over the Rougeaus, who are basically full heels. Brunzel and Jacques start off with some back and forth as Al says the Bees have put on some weight of late. Graham says you have to be big and strong to hang around the WWF. Al wonders if Brunzel can land that nice dropkick now that he's fat. Like, that's basically what he says. Like, I don't know if he can get that dropkick anymore that he's fat. Brunzel controls as the Rougeaus confer and regroup in the corner. Mooney and Graham mock the Bees' capri pants as Blair works Jacques' arm a bit. We continue to slowly move through this as Jacques offers Blair a handshake. Al keeps harping on the weight of the busy Bees, he calls them. Back and forth offense continues at a basic level with the Bees mainly frustrating the Rougeaus. Blair works the leg, but Ray slips away and tags out, which Graham rips him for. Jacques tries to help Ray stretch his leg in a funny bit. Blair now works Jacques' leg a bit until he escapes and tags Ray. Ray goes after the back, twisting into a Boston Crab. Blair gets free and hooks a Phil Nelson, but Jacques' distraction puts Ray back on top. The Rougeaus tag in and out, work over Blair for a bit. Blair catches Jacques with an inverted atomic drop and tags Brunzel, who comes in on fire. Brunzel lands that drop kick for 2, and things break down as the Rougeaus cheat, allowing Ray to fall on Brunzel for the win. I thought this was real boring and felt really in slow motion at times. Nothing stood out. They just kind of ebbed and flowed. And one of those matches, this is, you know, kind of technically fine as a tag match, but honestly, just pretty bland overall. So I went 2 stars on this, Scott.
I went 2 stars as well. Take a wild guess how long you think it was.
It felt like 25.
What do you think, Steve?
I don't think it was that long. It definitely felt long. I would say 16, 18.
All right, not that bad. 13:57. But it did feel like 43:57 in sometimes. The Bees, of course, with their new tights and Superstar commenting on them. This was another match that, and we've seen this one before. We saw it at the Garden. This was another match that could have gone in another gear and just never did. And they had more than enough time, so they had no excuse. 14 minutes. So they had more than enough time to get it into a gear, and they really never did. I don't know if the Bees realized that their clock was ticking, their days were numbered. I did kind of like Alfred acting a little heelish here, kind of approving.
Heelish? He was just calling him fat.
Yeah. You know, and he was, you know, approving, but he was also approving of the Rougeaus cheating, and he approved of the finish, and yeah, I kind of liked it on Alfred. I used to be a tag team wrestler myself. The commentary was okay. It would go up and down as the night went on, but this match definitely had the similar slog as the last one did. The only difference here was they had more time, and they really had no excuse because both these teams are really good, and they could really put on a good match, Steve. But again, another match that just missed the third gear and keeps it. It could have gone. I mean, it should have been a 3-star match with the quality of these two teams, and it just never got that far.
Yeah, I agree. Just as a sidebar, you mentioned about the attendance. According to Graham, he has it listed as 25,866, so just shy of 26,000 people.
Wow, that's a strong crowd.
they were. But, yeah, this – I don't know. I'm with you. I give it 2 stars as well. The Beast just looks so out of place by this point. Those tights, those have got to be some of the ugliest tights I've ever seen.
Especially on their fat asses.
and the commentary mentioned is like they said that the Bees are in their summer wear. It's like, what? Like, if that's summer wear, I got like that's summer wear. I don't know what they want to wear in other parts of the year.
Capri pants.
But yeah, this was 14 minutes. I mean, you expect so much more out of these two teams, and I think it's more the Bees than the Rougeaus. I mean, the Rougeaus have definitely looked really good since turning heel. I mean, we saw, you know, at the last house show how good they could be when they fought the Rockers, and just having to come here, and the Bees just look so – I don't think they cared anymore. I think they knew, like you said, they knew the writing was on the wall. They knew that they were on the low end of the face side of the tag division that was now starting to get really stacked, and – I don't know. It's just – they could easily have shaved some of the time off this match and given it to one of the other matches.
Or give it to nothing. Give it to nothing. I mean, the more you watch the show, the more I definitely believe the urban legend that Vince was trying to, you know, kill the crowd for the next night. I mean, when you think of it in that context and see how these matches play out, it's 100% believable.
Oh, no, I agree. I was just trying to be nice to some of the other matches that could have used used the time, but – but yeah, if anything, it's just like a good quality one for the Rougeaus, and hopefully the match they have at SummerSlam will prove to be a lot better than this one.
It better be. I mean, we've had MSG and we've had here big crowds, and it just they just can't hit that gear. Just can't hit it. They didn't hit it on this night. They should have.
I mean, especially with joke about Al calling them fat. I mean, they did look like they had put some weight on and were kind of lethargic as a result of it. And the Rougeaus, they've been really good heels as characters, but we haven't really seen like a crisp heel match for them that I can think of. Them and Rockers were good because Rockers pushed them to really work faster. But other than that, it's been kind of this when they've been doing. So they're really focused on the character work, but they're also ends up slowing down their in-ring as a result right now. So mesh that with the Bees, who are clearly in mail-it-in mode, and you get this, just time-killing. And again, it's technically proficient, but there's just no heat or excitement around it. So I had a hard time getting into it as well. So
yeah. All right. No, it was tough.
Let's chug along. Up next, a simmering issue still boiling from WrestleMania and that rematch that happened back in April at MSG, and that's Bret the Hitman Hart taking on Bad News Brown. Billy Graham calls Bret's hairstyle beautiful, as Al mentions that the sun is going down. Brown takes control off the bell with rugged strikes, as Graham says he never smiles. Bret turns around and battles Bad News with an elbow drop and stomps away. Brown slugs Bret down, but heads up top. It gets caught and slammed. Bret buries a nice elbow off the middle rope for 2. Graham keeps calling him Bad News Man, which was funny. Bret keeps working through the offense, getting a 2 count, but the Bad News Man blocks a backbreaker with a poke to the eye. Bad News cuts Bret down. The stiff clothesline comes up empty on a ghetto blaster. Bret dumps Bad News to the floor with a backdrop and flies over the top on top of him in a good spot. Back inside, Bret gets a crossbody for 2 and follows a slingshot sunset flip for 2. Bret gets a roll-up for 2, but Bad News reverses it and hooks it tight for the win. Anvil comes out to dispute the finish, and the Hearts beat on Bad News for a minute. Again, another fine match that picked up late. The first portion was a bit off, but then things got cooking. Bret looked good, takes a tough loss as he tries to make hay as a solo guy, but definitely a letdown from what I thought was a real crisp MSG match that we saw earlier in the year. I went 2 stars on this one, though, Steve. I enjoyed it enough, but again, just it never really found its way and just kind of petered out toward the end.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. I gave it 2 as well. I thought this was actually a pretty solid showing for Brett. Mm-hmm. As in, you know, again, this, you could definitely tell that the front office sees him as a potential solo star, but they're just not quite ready yet to pull the trigger. So let him have this, you know, these series of matches with Bad News, you know, sending off their what happened at WrestleMania 4. And, you know, Brett's obviously can take the loss easily. Brown's obviously the guy they're going to push harder. And it was funny when, you know, the end when Brown has the roll up and he's clearly grabbing the tights and Brett's like looking right at the official, pointing up. He's like, "Ref, look, he's holding my tights. He's holding my tights." But Ref just counts 3, doesn't care. So I thought that was kind of funny. And then obviously Brown gets beat up by the Hearts afterwards. But yeah, it's obviously a lot shorter than the MSG match, which hurts the quality a little bit. But for what it was, I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, I gave it a star. I was not impressed. Could have been a little better. Your match time was 6:26. This match I would have given some of the time in the Rougeos match too, because I think these two are good storytellers. Remember, they're cut from the same stew mold. So I think you could have gotten a really good match if they gotten a few more minutes. But again, another match I feel like got rushed for TV purposes, for future TV purposes, and didn't get that extra gear that it needed to get. Bad News, obviously. I mean, no, I have no issue with Brett eating the pin. He's not the important one in the singles side at the moment. Bad News is that guy that's going to keep moving ahead. But again, I feel like because they made these matches TV length instead of big show length, we didn't get a good flow like we should have on a big show. And that's one of the problems this show has, as many matches as it freaking has. I feel like a lot of them get stiffed because they were going to be used for future TV matches and didn't get that next gear going. A couple of matches later on in the show are the victims of the same problem.
It's
and
like
I think
there's
this
too
match,
many TV matches, though.
There's probably like...
No, Grandma has 4 having aired on TV.
I mean, they probably used them for other... I mean, they might have used them for other stuff. All right, let me rephrase this.
I don't see any that even were on video. I think just those 4 were on TV, and then others made, you know... whatever. There's like 2, I think, that were on video, so...
Some of them just didn't... Then I don't know why they would have needed to. I mean, you're on TV. There's no time limit or anything. So some of these matches probably could have used a few more minutes to really
you guys are
tell a good story.
You want the shit to be longer?
well, this match, definitely.
No.
Well, then maybe they wouldn't have sucked so bad if they weren't so fast. Easily.
Maybe if they were
going to
cut some
the,
out, I could see it. But, I mean, at this, I don't... I mean, 15 matches. I don't think we needed anything going any longer than we had.
Well, there's a couple matches that had no business being on the show anyway. They probably could have taken off and not had, but there were reasons for it, I suppose. Any event, this match could have been a lot better, and it wasn't. It was disappointing. Nothing against Brett. He's not at that level. He's not at that point yet where even he can make a 6-minute match look great. And Bad News is Bad News. He works a certain way. So disappointing for me. I only gave it a star for those two.
Yeah, I mean, I think it just is what it is. It's a bloated show with 15 matches that, you know, it was a big showcase show. They were going to turn it into a home video. I don't think they put too much thought into it. And again, I think a big part of it's probably just burning that crowd out. So I think that's all they cared about. I'm curious if it was made that type of show because of it. You know what I mean? Like, I'm curious what it was supposed to be originally and how it all came to be. But I mean, they did draw quite the crowd. So I'll give them credit there. And maybe, if you want to get real cynical, you could say they did it to make WrestleMania look better when you watch this. Another show had fucking 15 matches that never ended. All right. So. Next up, Hockey Talk Man and Jimmy Hart come out, talk to Mean Gene on the podium to talk about tonight's title defense. Honky and Jimmy aren't sweating it. And some pretty quick basic stuff from them. And that does bring us to our Intercontinental title match. As the Honky Tonk Man defends against Hacksaw Jim Duggan. Honky walks right to the ring for a big IC title defense. Duggan has the crowd fired up for his crack at the gold. We haven't seen Honky at MSG since before Mania, Scott. So it's been a while since we've seen the Honker.
It's been a while, yeah.
Honky stalls, but Duggan gets his hands on him, slugs away with hard punches. Honky ends up outside again, but Duggan slams him and Jimmy together and then fetches the champ. After Jimmy distraction, Honky catches Duggan coming in and starts to kick and punch away. Honky keeps control by going to the eyes as Al say Honky may be the greatest Intercontinental Champion ever. Duggan reverses a whip and knocks the champ down with a clothesline. He sets up for the three-point stance, but Jimmy trips him to draw the DQ. Duggan chases Jimmy around and dodges a guitar shot and then chases Honky off with the board. Duggan then smashes the guitar. Just a lame finish and an absolute nothing match. There was some good heat, but that was really it. There was nothing else doing in this one as we just continue to slog along. And, you know, I don't mind them giving Duggan the shot here, and it gives Honky a pretty hot challenger to battle, especially since, like we said, we haven't even seen him, and he's pulling the second biggest title, setting up to fight, you know, face Beefcake. I thought it was fine, and I don't even mind them doing a DQ here because Duggan, you know, he's still kind of protecting him a bit. And then... you know, Honky obviously can't lose, but I mean, do something before that point. You know, it's just, it was a whole bucket of nothing. So 1 star, Scott, and that's generous because of the heat.
Yeah. I gave it a star as well. Your match time is 4:38, but I have an interesting. I got my
2x4. There it is.
Well, I was about to say something actually complimentary of him, believe it or not. I contend, and tell me if you guys agree. You didn't. You actually still had your Mid-South tights on. I'm going to take them. Quiet. Nobody can hear you. Stick a brat in your mouth. I would contend. How did Simon Cowell approve that cut on this album? I would contend that if SummerSlam was not happening and this was the big show, I would say Duggan could have won the title on this night. That's how over he was, and that's how dead I think Honky is. If there was not a SummerSlam coming up in a month, I think Duggan would have won the title here. It had that feeling. Duggan crazy over, great feud with Andre, which was a national feud, even though we specifically saw the matches at the Garden, JR. It was talked about a lot on Superstars. So that was kind of a nationally booked feud between Andre and Duggan. And I would contend that if we didn't have another show in a month, that that Duggan could have won the title here. That's
no,
how over
no, I haven't, Dust, but we're all still looking for her.
Looking for who? I don't know, Dust. I think I just found the drunk crusher. I think I just found Vern Gagne's house.
All right. Well, I mean, yeah, sure. But they obviously had other things planned, and Beefcake was still in the feud. I think Duggan was over enough to be in the mix of potential an IC champion. And yeah, the Andre feud was a pretty big deal. And it's funny that we divert here a little bit off of it. Obviously, they were still trying to wrap up the other Andre story. But, yeah, I'm fine with how it went. I didn't need much.
No, me too. And again, only a quick 4:38. I'm just saying that had Honky, and it was already set, obviously announced that Honky was facing Beefcake in a Mania rematch at the Garden on August 29th, that I think Duggan could have won the belt here. Mm-hmm. So. What do you think, Steve?
You definitely have a point. I gave the match a 1 as well. I'm just ready for the. I think it's time for Honky's reign to end. By this time he had it way too long. Like you said, he's dead in the water by this point. Not a believable champion anymore. And yeah, I mean, Duggan was really over, and you could feasibly believe that he could be the champion. But like JR said. They, you know, Honky still had the issue with Beefcake going, and it seemed like they wanted to get that wrapped up first and give and thought that Beefcake was a little higher on the food chain than Duggan to give him the belt. Obviously, we'll see what happens at SummerSlam, but I could definitely see them thinking, you know, maybe we give it to Duggan for a little bit, see how he can run as a champion. Can't be any worse than what Honky's been through so far.
Yeah, I mean.
Well, the second half of Honky. Well, I mean, first half of Honky's reign was great, but That I mean, the honky line was, you know, right after the main event. Since then, it's been rough. And it's sad because, Scott, we were tracking it. And then I feel like we haven't even talked about him. We were, like, super into his reign. And it really did just dive off a cliff after the Savage stuff. And even that was diminishing returns, as we noted, toward the end. But, it's sad to see his reign, which started so well and so promising with so much heat, just, you know, fall to this. And Beefcake's over, and it looks definitely like he's primed to win the title at SummerSlam. Time will tell. Yep. All right, next up.
Would you have imagined that the Honky Tonk Man would have been champion for over a year by this point?
No.
No, I don't think anyone could. I mean, yeah, that's...
Absolutely not. No.
It's crazy to think.
I think it was still perplexing at the time that he didn't drop it to Beefcake at Mania. I still think that's kind of nuts, you know?
Yeah. Obviously worked out, as we'll see. But, I mean, I think what
Yeah.
I think the long game was have Beefcake win it at SummerSlam originally. Like, you know, let him chase through the summer. Because you're not going to have, you know, we've talked about that before, Scott, right? You know, you have the world title change and get the tag titles. Like, you really want to bury another title change on that card.
True. True.
So I think they were saving it as a hook for... I'm sure they had SummerSlam planned by that point, I would think. So, all right, next up, we have another rematch from MSG last month as the Powers of Pain take on the Bolsheviks. The Powers of Pain continue to get established. Graham is all lubed up as the Powers of Pain slide in and go right at the Russians and clear the ring. I mean, he is like fucking just ready to bust a load over the Warlord's chest. He's like, ah, that's so huge, brother. Look at those arms, brother. He is awful. Wet. All right, we restart with Nikolai and Barb getting a stalemate as Graham is just wondering where Barbarian's from. He's still stuck on this, where Barbarian is located. Boris tags in against Mo Down and drop of the power slam. Graham says Demolition has to be worried about the Powers of Pain as the Russians regroup again. Nikolai briefly overpowers Warlord, gets an assist from Boris to force Warlord down. Warlord pushes through and regains control and tags Barb, who smacks Boris around. Barbarian misses a charge slam shoulder first to the post, giving the Russians new life. And that short-lived, Barbarian cuts them both down with a clothesline. Warlord beats on both men, and then things break down into a brawl. The Warlord eventually draws Boris with a power slam. Barbarian hits a headbutt off the top for the win. Another fine squash, but not as energetic or crisp as MSG at all. Powers of Pain keep rolling and make their mark, and the Russians just keep jobbing, which will be their role going forward. So I want to star again because the Powers of Pain have been fun to watch, and you get Graham just gushing over them. But not as fun as that real hot MSG squash we watched, Scott. So, Steve, what did you go for this one?
I actually went half star. It was what it was. I mean, I the Powers of Pain definitely looked primed to be the next big face team of the tag division, even though you just turned the Heart Foundation face and they have the title shot coming up at SummerSlam. But you could definitely tell that the Powers of Pain were brought in to be the next big feud for Demolition just by their look. You know, you got two guys that look like they could match up power-wise with Demolition, and they get to show it off here. And the Bolsheviks, you know, they're fodder. They can take the loss easily. They look like the goose that they do. And yeah, the Powers of Pain just looked really crisp, really effective. Maybe a little bit too long for it being a squash, but again, know what they were going for and give the Powers of Pain a big quality win. And they're pretty over, but with the crowd at this point.
Yeah. I gave it a star. And the commentary of Superstar, it was just ridiculous. And he wasn't, and it would continue with all the guys that look like that, but Powers of Pain were the worst. It was like, look at these guys in this federation. You got to be big and strong and muscular. And he was like, one adjective after another, it was getting a little awkward. But you got to be really strong and muscular. And I thought I was going to say veiny soon or whatever, but. But yeah, this was another, and obviously, you know, Nikolai being the more, experienced, guy within the company, Boris was going to eat all the pins on this team. But yeah, not much more there. Your official time is 6:47, which is a little longer than I thought it would be.
Yeah.
But, mm-hmm. But again, Powers of Pain, another face team that moving up the ranks. Bolsheviks have always been slated as a team that was just going to eat pins on all the shows.
Yeah.
And have. And Yeah, that's it. This was another one that was probably just kind of a showcase match.
And the Bolshevik thing's fine, too, because you really need, when you have this deep of a tag division, especially with so many faces and whatnot, I mean, it helps to have a jobber-level heel team, you know, a name jobber team. The Bolsheviks can win matches on TV against, true jobbers, but you need teams like that to really fill it out. And I think the bees are starting to sink there on the face side. You know, when you have a shallow division, you don't necessarily need that. You can just, whatever happened when Squash isn't viewed with each other, which we'll see, you know, about 8 years from now. But at this point, with such depth and so many tag matches and everyone up another card, you kind of just, you need bottom feeders, and that's what the Bolsheviks are well positioned to be. So I thought it was shrewd to have them in that role where they could pick up some wins on TV, but then just be fed to all these other teams, which I thought was smart.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. And, I was surprised Vince picked up Powers of Pain, considering they looked so much like the tag team champions, but as you would see over the next couple months, he would have to do some shuffling. But
I thought smart. They look great. I mean, they look great. They fit the wheelhouse, and they've been super over. So I'm interested to see, you know, why we go the route we go. I guess it's just tough because Demolition was equally as over. So they're kind of
exactly.
They're in a good spot in a way, also a frustrating one. Okay.
But anyway,
next up, we have another random singles match as Jim the Anvil Neidhart takes on Leaping Lanny Poffo, very random at this point. And odd that Anvil's being positioned as a heel here, is their turn. Very much like the Rougeaus, has really ebbed and flow throughout the summer. It's been very random, especially since him and Brett were just out there arguing with the Rougeaus, with Ben is Brown earlier. We've seen them arguing with the Rougeaus, and now we're here where he's basically put in as a heel against Leaping. So it's very odd. Poffo starts hot with strikes and goes for a moonsault, but Anvil gets the knees up to block. Anvil laughs and clubs away and clotheslines Lanny across the top rope. The announcers riff on Anvil's haircut as he just batters Poffo with angry strikes. Anvil comes up empty on a charge. Lanny pops him in the face, and then Anvil catches a charging Lanny. He gets a power slam for the win. Just a squash filled with strikes. Aimless, pointless. I don't get why we needed this match at all on this card. If you want to get Anvil some run, just have him be in Brett's corner for that match. Why do we need this? Just a complete time filler. Half a star, generous, again. And the Anvil stuff's just confusing, Scott. I don't get why he's out there wrestling as a heel when they've pretty much been positioned as faces and positioned as SummerSlam as faces against Demolition.
I agree. Your match time is just 2:34. But it's weird because Neidhart got some decent face pops, and Lanny was getting kind of booed. So I think the crowd may be tiring of that shtick and his bad haircut. This match was so short that Alfred couldn't even get supple in anywhere. That's how fast the squash
there
went.
There it is.
No supple. This match was tight and supple. Yes, it was, Alfred. It was, because it was only 2.5 minutes. I don't know what the hell the point of this even was. See, this is what I'm talking about. Like, this was pointless. There was no need for these two to even have a match. What, to give Neidhart a payday? I mean, come on. What did Savage tell Vince, you got to have my brother on this match so he can get a check? I mean, come on. All right, we'll put him out of this match. He's going to get his ass kicked, but if you want, I mean, you know what I mean? I don't know. I have no idea.
It was point. It was aimless. It made no sense. And you could have stuck Poffo in against.
It made no sense.
And you could have stuck Poffo in against Boss Man even, and just leave Scott Casey home and put Anvil in Brett's corner and you know, saved us at least 5 minutes of nonsense here.
Exactly.
You know, between the match and the entrances and all that. So whatever. We didn't need it. It was unnecessary. There's a couple of those. This is definitely a glaring one. This is probably it's only 2.5 minutes, but this I would say is the match that could have most likely been cut that wasn't needed on this show. There's another one later, but this is like, to me, number one I would have axed.
Right. Yeah. What do you think, Steve?
Yeah, I completely agree. I went dud on this one. No need for it whatsoever. I know that, you know, they want to get Neidhart over, but it's like, yeah, he could have just been in Brett's corner, and yeah, you either shave this time off or give it just to Brett Bad News. Let them put on a better match with a few little bit more time. Like you said, you could have put Poffo in, you know, Scott Casey's place in the opener, and that would have worked just fine. I don't know. Just, yeah, complete waste of time. No, not needed at all.
Agreed.
Yeah,
what is needed,
much.
Though, is our next match. I guess half of our, I guess we can call it co-main event of the evening. And the World Wrestling Federation heavyweight title is on the line as the Macho Man Randy Savage defending against the Million Dollar Man Ted DiBiase one more time here. Sean Mooney and Lord Al calling this one, and the crowd is fired up for Savage as he comes in to keep the feud rolling. Virgil goes right at Liz to set the tone, and Ted begs off the champ. Savage goes after Virgil, gets jumped by the challenger. Ted's relentless in his attack, punching away and smashing the champion with an elbow. Smash comes back with a clothesline and starts to unload, sending Ted outside with an atomic drop. Al says Savage is putting in overtime in the gymnasium to prepare for this one. DiBiase comes back and buries a knee, but Savage blocks a sunset flip and maintains control. It's brief, though, as Ted yanks Savage to the floor by his tights and then slings his head into the timekeeper's table a few times. Back inside, Ted goes to work with punches and kicks, mixing in pin covers where he can. Savage tries to come back, but eats a boot on a charge, and the challenger gets back on offense. Liz looks on in concern as Ted closes in on the win. Savage blocks a suplex with one of his own. They trade punches on their knees, and Mooney says it was a midget boxing match. Ted cuts Savage down and goes to a chin lock, which keeps it cinched in for a bit. Savage finally breaks the hold, but Ted kicks him off and dodges a charge, sending Savage crashing hard to the corner. Savage blocks a step over toe hold and then kicks him over the top. Savage catches Ted coming in off the top and slugs away. Savage is hobbled, but snaps Ted's neck across the top and then slowly climbs to the top but comes down to tangle with Virgil. DiBiase and Virgil collide, and Savage gets a roll-up for two. Ted catches Savage with his head down, goes to the million-dollar dream, but the champ forces the rope break, which gives Virgil a chance to smash him in the head with a chair, but Ted only gets two on that one. Ted contemplates his next move. Savage grabs him with an inside cradle and steals the win to a huge pop. Ted shoves the referee, and him and Virgil batter Savage. This is real fun. On par with their first two MSG matches. Started slow, but really built into something hot at the end. And I like the finish with Savage sneaking out the win. Ted looked like he was finally going to get the title, and he just takes that one momentary pause, and Savage just pounces. It's been a great feud. We've seen plenty of matches between these two. I went 3.5 on this one, Steve.
Yeah, I went 3.5 too. This was a very good match. These two have had a really, really good feud. I mean, you could argue this was probably one of the year's best feuds for the WWF. They got plenty of time to tell a great story, and I like how they keep the continuity of the matches we've seen in MSG about how Virgil keeps constantly getting involved, and you think at one point it's gonna finally lead to Savage losing, but he somehow keeps fighting back, and then you know he surprises DiBiase at the end there for the win. I'm like with you. I probably would put it. Slightly behind the cage match from June, but this is definitely, I think, one of their best matches from the year, and I think a fitting end to the singles feud between them. Obviously, we know that they're going to meet at SummerSlam one more time in the tag, but I thought this was a really good way to end this odyssey for these two, mm-hmm. And I think it's raised the level for both guys, both Savage as the champion and DiBiase as one of the top workers in this company.
Now, Scott, before we get to you, was this on the tape,
yeah.
or is this one cut off? Do you remember? I know one of the big main events was not on the WrestleFest tape.
I think
this one was left off, right?
Yeah, this was the one that was cut off. It's on the Macho Madness tape,
right?
Yeah, no, the Coliseum release was all about the last match, which we'll get to at the end. But it's on the cover, I think, and actually Warrior's on the cover, who's in here later too, but. Yeah, the Coliseum release was all about the last match. It wasn't about this one at all, which is kind of a bummer. But I gave this 4 stars. I think this match is fabulous. 14:52, and to me, this is a candidate. If we did this award, JR, if there ever was one for that year, this should be feud of the year. They've been on fire.
Yep.
And there's something about. Like, I'm glad that this was the pairing off of the two of the SummerSlam main event teams,
mm-hmm.
because there's something about the chemistry between Savage and DiBiase that even like DiBiase and Hogan wouldn't have.
Right.
Savage, you can argue. I mean, look, Hogan tells a great story in the ring. Of course he does. Savage sometimes, depending on the opponent, tells a better one. And I think DiBiase was that kind of wrestler, mm-hmm. that worked better with a guy that was similar in his weight. Not to use a superstar Billy Grahamisms, but similar his build and kind of that type of worker. Both very similar guys, almost identical. in terms of work rate.
Right,
and how
someone
they,
that could
how
go,
their style
yeah.
is.
I mean, someone that could just go with them and you know, play someone that was so over as a face that made him his heel stuff really stand out as well. Like that's a big part of it too.
Exactly, and no one. I mean, there's a couple of guys down the line over the next 20 years that could. That could be equal this, but at this time, no one's a better face in peril than Savage. Savage takes such a great shit kicking, and it just tells a good story. And the crowd was into it. He has been perfectly great as World Wrestling Federation champion in this stretch.
Yeah,
perfectly fine. Mm-hmm. And
do you feel like did you want some variance though? Like, he's been great, but it's all been him and DiBiase. Like, we haven't really gotten to see much variance in his reign. Like, I guess it'll come, but...
You know what kills that, JR? The lack in the summertime of a Saturday night's main event.
Yeah.
Because the Saturday night's main event's always had different variety of guys. Right. And he could have probably had a... If they had a Saturday night's main event, say, in July, maybe like... or even... the following Saturday, a couple weeks before SummerSlam, and he defends a title, maybe not against Andre, but against like
Rude
maybe Bad News Brown
or
Rude or somebody like that, then maybe. But the problem is there wasn't a lot of outlets for Savage TV-wise.
I understand it's limited. It's unfortunately limited a bit of like what we could have maybe seen from him during the sign. Because you mentioned, I mean, his reign has been great, but it's also he's had this great chemistry with the one opponent he's fought constantly. Are you guys surprised or impressed that they had the restraint to save the SummerSlam main event for SummerSlam?
Yeah.
That they didn't have it here or another show, like, as a preview. Like, they really tried to make it big and important and protected by, like, not busting it out here, where they easily could have just, you know, thrown it out. Here is, like, a walkthrough or a practice match. And I don't think they take it to the circuit at all. I think SummerSlam is the first time they have that match. So, anyway, this is the thought I had, that how well they protected that match and made it as special as they could by making it the only time they'd see it.
I think that because both all four guys are so good in so many different in separate ways and in similar ways, that they were able to stretch it out. I think it's easier for me to answer your question, JR, when we get to the last match.
And just to confirm, I just checked, and they do not have that tag match at all before.
No, I doubt it. Yeah, no, I agree. I seriously doubt they did anywhere. I'm gonna expound on your question when we get to the last match, because my answer kind of goes more with that one than that match than this match. So I'll wait, Steve. If you have any thoughts on it, I'm gonna wait a little bit till we get to the last match before I. Because your question's good, JR, but it's more suited for me towards the last match than this match. But, Steve, what do you got?
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same – I kind of think I know where you're going with this, so I kind of like to hold the majority of the comments for the main event. But I do agree that, I think you could definitely – it meant something that they thought SummerSlam was going to be a huge show, that they would have that tag match there and then have the two singles matches here to kind of put – finish to kind of play those off and then build into the SummerSlam match. So I thought it was a very smart and possibly even shrewd decision to make that tag match at SummerSlam, make it feel all the more special, especially, adding in Jesse as a ref and having it in the garden just makes it feel big time.
Right. Cause they easily could have run these two singles matches there, right? They could have done the big rematches from WrestleMania at SummerSlam. So it was cool that they decided to take a different slant, combine the star power into one big match and to go that route. Because you couldn't blame them if they ran these two matches there. They could have done Hogan and Andre in the cage at SummerSlam and Savage DiBiase for the title. So it's interesting the route they went. Scott, real quick, what's your grade? And then we'll hit a break here.
Oh, I said 4 stars.
Okay. All right, great.
No, 4 stars. It's amazing. Is it close to the cage? Let me see what I gave the cage.
I think I went 4 on the cage. I mean, to me, the cage was their best match, like Steve mentioned.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
May, right? May one?
It was June, wasn't it?
No, well, yeah, I gave June. May 4 stars.
Yeah, well, that's you. It was good.
I gave June 4 stars.
Yeah, yeah. To me,
and I gave this 4 stars.
To me, June
so
was the
you
best.
Can tell how, you can tell how I think about this feud.
Yeah. To me, June was the best. That was the big cage blow off. and May, this May and April to me are all like hairs apart. Because I think I went three and a half on all three, I believe. Three and a half in May. They didn't fight in April, right? Or, oh, yeah, they did, actually, right? That's when DiBiase won. I went three and a half there, too. So, yeah. So these three, to me, are all bunched together. I'm with Steve, though. I think I'd have to look back at my notes for those other ones. But I think this may be the second best that they had. But it's splitting hairs with those three. To me, with the cage, clearly.
Right. But you also have the Saturday Night's Main Event match, which was very good, too. So that's, you know, that could be up there. I mean, obviously, their worst match was the Mania match, which... You know, can't blame them. It was a long night for both of them. And it was more about, you know, Hogan helping Savage win the belts from and screwing over DiBiase. So,
yeah. No, that match was more about the theater than the work rate. You're exactly right, Steve.
Yeah, I have Saturday's main event. Oh, and, sorry. I had Saturday's main event in WrestleMania 3. So I kind of escalate from there up until the cage. All right, yeah. So why don't we head to a break, Scott?
Yeah, why don't we take a breather? We're probably about halfway through. I think we got, what, six matches left or 10, 26, something like that.
Feels like it.
Other than the length, JR, in terms of quality, what do you think so far? Taking the length out of it, really.
Not great. I mean,
it's not, right?
Outside of Savage DiBiase, it's just been a slog, honestly, a lot of it. Like I said, the excitement I had for the Boss Man squash, I felt like the crowd was engaged. We're going to get a good show, you know, and then it just has dwindled since. And even the you know, couple of matches I thought were two stars, which put them on the high end so far, were both fucking boring. So, yeah, other than Savage DiBiase, this has not really been that great. And as we'll see, I don't think there's much better ahead, but we'll see. So,
what do you think, Steve, so far?
Yeah, I think JR just said it best. I mean, it's been a real slodge to get through the show. I mean, thank God for Savage and DiBiase putting on the great match they did, because if they didn't have this match and we just relied on the main events, this might be it could be one of the worst shows of the year.
Yeah. Well, we'll take a break, and when we return, we will conclude. We'll finish off the show. We have one more title match to get through. And our main event, which probably could be the legitimate end of one of the biggest feuds and stories told in wrestling history. But first, let's take a break, because... But I want you to know, if I could fly, I'd pick you up, I'd take you into the night, and show you.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the pro wrestling only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place for Nations, JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceForNation.com. We offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, along with Main Event, Survey Says, the Monday Night Wars, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction show, as well as Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver special network podcasts and pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Match of the Week podcasts, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Through the Years, Worldcast, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Center Stage, and Letters from Kayfabe, plus much more. And on our very popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as Talking Pop, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, NBA Team, PTBN Play, Sunday Groove, Breaking Balls, and Lucha Undead,
as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans
with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversations, Geek and Sassy, and Marvel Age Podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows, plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback today. All these shows, plus others, available at PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is the King of Old School, Steve Carino, the true voice of Ring of Honor, and you're listening to the Place to Be podcast.
All right, Tenacia, we are back, making our way through the odyssey that is WrestleFest 1988. Joining us here tonight, Steve Riddle. And, of course, as I was watching this, Scott, I think I mentioned before the show, it took me a few attempts. And usually I can get through these at a decent clip, but this one, like, and I kept putting it off, like, finishing it. I was like, oh, God. But eventually I decided I'm going to roll with it and just finish it and get here tonight. And also rolling with it on this evening back in 1988, Scott, was the one and only the great Steve Winwood, who had the number one song in the nation the day that this show happened, and that was Roll With It. And that leads us into Scott Criscola's Pop Culture Corner.
Thank you, JR. And yes, with this being a Sunday, the day before, the 30th, Steve Winwood was the number one song in the country with Roll With It, actually one of the better songs of the decade. Number two, the great Richard Marx, who was number one but fell down with Hold On to the Night. Number three, Hands to Heaven by Breathe. Number four, Pour Some Sugar on Me, Def Leppard. Of course, we're looking at pretty much the same list we had the week before, because it's only been 1 week, so a lot of the songs are close. Make Me Lose Control by Eric Carmen at five. Sign Your Name by our guy, JR, the great Terrence Trent D'Arby at number six. In Excess with New Sensation
at seven.
His
career was circling the wishing wheel at this point.
Yes, it was. He's in the Killer Bees of the countdown. Gloria Estefan with 1, 2, 3 at number eight. Rush Hour by Gene Wiedlin, the big solo, Belinda Carlisle solo hit from the Go-Go's at number nine. And then I Don't Want to Go On with You Like That by Elton John at number 10.
And while we're here, I guess, Scott, we'll really just mention quick, PlayStation.com. Of course, we have the Greatest Song of the 80s tournament ongoing.
Yes.
Be sure to check that out each and every day. We're rounding down in round two. It's going to finish this week. So be sure to get all your votes in. Catch up if you haven't yet. And it's been great. We've had a lot of great conversation, a lot of votes, which we appreciate. Hopefully everyone's enjoying watching the videos and reliving the songs. So we've maintained some pretty strong voting from round one to round two, which is nice. So it's good to see. Steve, do you have a favorite you think could win this thing?
I don't know. There's a lot of big songs still on the table. It's been fun going through this, and just this round alone, seeing a lot of big songs that are get knocked out is just kind of disheartening. But you know, this is where the cream's gonna rise up. And if I had to pick one, though, partial to my fandom, but I would probably go with Living on a Prayer by Bon Jovi, just because they were my first favorite band, and that's such an iconic 80s hit.
All right, well, we'll see how it fares as things move on. So be sure to check that out. We'll talk about the rest of PlayStation.com at the end of the show. But be sure to get your votes in now before round two ends, and we move on to really now out of the pool round, and we'll be moving into the tournament round. The top 128 will go into a seeded bracket style tournament from here on. So get those final pool votes in.
Yes, absolutely. It's going to be awesome. A lot of favorites still floating around, dark horses and personal fan favorites. So all across the board, gonna be a lot of fun. Let's go to the silver screen. Let's go to the movies that came out the previous Friday, the 29th, JR. And our first one is one of the more famous ones of the later part of the decade. This guy had a great run of 80s films. Mm-hmm. The movie is, and we could probably use a few of them after watching this show, Cocktail.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, big one from the late 80s for this guy.
All right, so let me pull this up here. God damn it. All right. Brian Flanagan gets a part-time job as a bartender at night while studying for a business degree one day. By day. Over time, he learns the tricks of the trade, including flaring, from his mentor, Doug Coughlin. His advice usually begins with Coughlin's Law. Brian has had high personal aspirations, but Doug is leery of the two starting their own bar together. Doug intends to call his bar Cocktails and Dreams. Eventually, Brian and Doug's bartending act becomes popular, and they start working at a trendy nightclub. And hilarity ensues from there. Starring Tom Cruise as Brian Flanagan, Brian Brown, Elizabeth Shue, Lisa Baines, Lawrence Luckinbill, Kelly Lynch, Gina Gershon, Ellen Foley, Ron Dean. And that's
it. A lot of hachi-machi in this movie. 80s Elizabeth Shue, Kelly Lynch, a very young Gina Gershon. Wow, a lot of hachi-machi in that one. Very interesting. The next one... the second one does not have any hachi-machi in it at all. It is an incredibly creepy horror movie with an incredibly creepy toy in it. It is called Monkey Shines.
Oh, that was going to be Child's Play.
No, we're a couple. I had a feeling you were going to say that. No, we're a couple of years away from Child's Play.
I don't know. They're all one big horror movie to me. Alan Mann is an athlete who rendered quadriplegic when struck by a truck. Mann fails to adjust to his condition, becoming suicidal and despondent when Jeffrey, a scientist friend of his who had been experimenting with the injection of human brain tissue into monkeys, learns this. He's prompted to supply one of the experimental monkeys named Ella to Alan as a helper. And fuck the rest. Starring Jason Biggie? An idea?
Big.
That sounds right.
Big.
John Pankow, Kate McNeil, Joyce Van Patten, Stephen Root. Jeez, he was around doing this shit. William Newman, 2D Wiggins, David Early. Boo is Ella. Boo the monkey. Boo.
Janine Turner from... What was the Alaska movie show? What was that show from Alaska with the doctor? I don't know. She was in that. There you go. Monkey Shines.
Was that from Alaska? Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman? Is that what you're talking about?
No. She was on the Wilderness. What the hell was it called? It had the other... Oh, I don't know. Whatever. Anyway, she was on a doctor show from Alaska in the 90s. And now, this is very fitting. I don't know why. Maybe because it's just utterly goofy. But the third movie that came out... Swedish.
Isn't Dr. T and the Women? Is that what you're talking about?
No. The New Adventures
of Old Christine.
Hippie Longstocking.
Oh, geez, sorry. Northern Exposure was the movie, the show you're thinking of.
Northern Exposure. There you go.
All right. New Adventures of Pippi. The New Adventures, you said? Or the Old Adventures?
The New Adventures of Pippi Longstocking. I don't know if there were any old ones.
I don't know. It's not actually coming up, I don't think. Let's see.
It should be.
I didn't have the new. I didn't have the new. I didn't have the new.
Oh.
Pippi Longstocking travels on the ship the Hop Toad with her sailor father Ephraim and encounters a sudden storm caused by a volcano. After Ephraim disappears into the sea, Pippi travels the small coastal town of Roxby, accompanied by her horse Alfonso and her monkey Mr. Nielsen. She takes up residence in her father's home, and they start to do raidings together on Monday nights. Villa Coella, which is the neighborhood children believe is haunted. That's enough. Starring Tammy Aaron, Dave Seaman Jr., Corey Crow, Ellen Brennan, Dennis Dugan, George DiCenzo, Dick Van Patten. Luther's in this one. It was Gregory, Strange Adventure of Glue.
Here we go.
I'm sorry.
Wait, not, Dick Van Patten. Yeah. Wait, who's in it?
I said Luther, but it's not him.
No, that's the other. That's Jerry Van Dyke. Jerry Van Dyke. Wrong van. It's Jerry Van Dyke.
It's a very long Monday.
Who's dead? Dick Van Patten is not dead. So
yeah, he is.
Well, he's doing like he's probably doing life insurance commercials at this point.
No, he died in 2015.
Did he really?
Yeah.
Oh my God! Wow, I didn't know that.
Complications from diabetes.
That sucks. He was doing those for a while. He was doing what pet food ads and shit like that. So anyway. Okay. So there's the movies that came out that day. We're gonna skip baseball this week because it's only been a week. You know, the standings really didn't change much. So we're not gonna go too nuts. Who's your team, Mr. Riddle?
Well, I'm not that really big of a baseball fan. I'm more of a guy that likes to go to the games in person than watch them on TV. But I guess since I lived in the Maryland area for a long time, I guess it would be the Orioles, since they were probably the only team in the area around.
JR loves having Orioles fans on the show.
Oh, yeah.
Well, in any event, the Yankees beat the Blue Jays. Too bad Kelly's not on tonight. Yanks beat the Blue Jays on this night. Mets beat the Pirates in actually a pretty big series, as they were 1-2 in the division. And the Orioles, who were fucking horrible, they lost 4-1. So just the only quick thing I'll say is the Orioles were at this point 32-71. There you go.
Ugh.
So there you go.
Speaking of Toronto, Kelly's Blue Jays, Scott, was announced today that SummerSlam 2019 will be in Toronto. D'Amato's already rallying the troops. We're looking road trip. I've never been to Toronto, so I'm pretty pumped. I definitely want to go.
I never have either. I think somebody say that your team will be in town? Is that
Mighty
is
Mark Poirier said that? Yeah, said the Yankees will be visiting the Jays that weekend. So I'm thinking Yankees, Jays, NXT, and SummerSlam for me. So
I'm thinking that as well. I think the doctor might be interested in that trip. I try to coerce him. I think that'd be a lot of fun. I think we'd out of the country for a nice PTB excursion next year. And I said there was one birth and one death. On this date, July 31st, 1988, AJ Green, current Cincinnati Bengals wide receiver, was born on this date. So, let you know that. Of course, that would make him, 30 years old.
Yeah,
so, AJ Green. AJ Green was born on this date. Now, guy who passed away, he's been in a lot of interesting movies. It's not a name you would see unless you were a big Weird Al fan. And a few of his songs are in the tournament JR.
Mm-hmm.
Trinidad Silva. Don't know him probably by name, but he was in UHF, which was Weird Al's first big movie. He died on this date in a car accident in Whitten, California. Very sad, at the age of 38. But he was in UHF. He was actually on Hill Street Blues. He was in the movie Colors. And he was in UHF, which is what he was filming when he died. He was filming. He was in the middle of filming when he was in the car accident. So very sad. But we'll get to UHF, JR, later on down the line when you do your movies. But so there you go. And that is your pop culture report. Try to keep it brief because the show is not. So why don't we go back to Milwaukee for our next one?
Damn you, 1988. All right. Next up, I get a taste of modern day as we'd see our next match, and that is Curt Hennig taking on Terry Taylor. And a good heat on Curt from a crowd that knows him well, of course, from the AWA. We'll get to that in 1 second. But this is it from a current era DVD. So our commentary on it features Michael Cole and Mick Foley. It's from the Curt Hennig Mr. Perfect DVD that came out in the 2000s. So we jump ahead quite a bit with the commentary. But yeah, this is Curt Hennig's debut for us. Born Curtis Michael Hennig, of course, in 1958, March 28th. Was childhood friends with wrestler Rick Rude and attended Robbinsdale High School. If you remember, of course, all of the crew that, you know, went through that hometown, Tom Zenk, Brady Boone, Nikita Koloff, Rick Rude, John Nord, Barry Darso. Just a lot of talent came out of there. Known as Cool Curt Hennig, began in the AWA, the promotion where his father starred, Larry the Axe. Of course, Hennig left the AWA, joined the WWF in 1982, started there as a promising young performer, and then was paired up in a tag team with Eddie Gilbert. Had a brief run there, but not much memorable happened. Returned to the AWA in 1984, became one of the top stars, won the tag team titles with Scott Hall, defeating Gorgeous Jimmy Garvin and Mr. Electricity Steve Regal in Albuquerque, New Mexico. resumed a solo career, later defeating the legendary Nick Bockwinkel for the AWA heavyweight title at Super Clash 87 with the help of Larry Zbyszko, turned heel as he did that, and along with his father, engaged in a long feud with Greg and Vern Gagne. Began associated with Medusa, the AWA women's title, at the end of 87, joined the Diamond Exchange at that time as well, held the AWA world title for 53 weeks, lost to it to Jerry Lawler on May 9th, 1988, not that long, Scott, before he then just jumped ship. And really, you know, the AWA was starting to hit the skids a bit. This was a tough loss for them, a guy that really was... you know, just one of their top names and biggest stars. And now he defects, wanted more money and more fame. And he makes his debut just 2 days before this, Scott, his first, I should say his return. I mean, obviously he had been around for a while in the early 80s, defeated Scott Casey in Tacoma, Washington on the 29th. And then this is his first big match back against Terry Taylor here tonight. And we talked about Taylor a few shows ago. So we'll dig in here. Foley immediately brings up the urban legend that both of these guys were in contention for the Mr. Perfect gimmick, and said, you know, they both would have been okay, but obviously they made the right choice. Like, he said Taylor would have been fine, but Hennig was Mr. Perfect. And I was surprised because I've always, like, I've never seen that actually substantiated at all. Like, you've always heard it and it's circulated that they both were hired at the same time. They were deciding which gimmick to go with who. And so it was weird to hear him perpetuate that. So I don't know, maybe there's some truth to it. He also made a joke about Taylor being like the perfect Red Rooster or whatever, which was funny. All right, so we get some basic open here with trading some holds until Taylor dropkicks Hennig to the floor. Even though Taylor's working as a heel in the past, he seems to be a face here. Back inside, Taylor keeps control, shoving Hennig down, cranking on a side headlock. Hennig turns the tide and kicks away, fighting through some comebacks. Hennig keeps slugging away and grabs a sleeper. Taylor breaks the hold and gets a real weak crossbody for two. And there seemed to be an issue in the crowd as they're chanting the goodbye song at somebody. So I don't know if someone was getting thrown out or what was going on. Something was happening there. They were distracted. Perfect catches Taylor with a hard-running forearm and gets the win. Not much doing here, but both guys did look, you know, fairly sharp. Pretty much a squash. Taylor's already being marginalized in this role. But it's clear that Hennig's the one that's going to get the push. And they put him over pretty strong in his former, you know, stomping grounds and hometown here in Milwaukee. So I went one star. For this one, but yeah, just not much happening. Just obviously more memorable for being the debut of current heading. So I forget where we're at. Scott, are you up on this one?
I'll start. Okay. Your match time 4:52, and this was the one, by the way. The copy we had is the one that's on the Perfect DVD, so yeah. It was an extra. So your announcers were Cole and Mick Foley, which is so dreadful. And we're only like a year and a half off from one of the best, arguably, even though this era of the AWA, the last 3 years, is pretty much gutter trash otherwise. The feud between, you know, Hennig and one of my favorite heels of all time, Nick Bockwinkel, arguably one of the greatest feuds of all time, and really a great world title feud that kept things moderately stable in the AWA in this stretch. Because for the most part, it wasn't. But the rest of it was shit. Which is why Vince just kind of stomped right into AWA territory to do the show, as did Crockett one night later. So both companies realized that Vern was a fucking doormat right now. You look at Kurt Hennig and you look at Terry Taylor, and I've been watching on the network old Mid South and, you know, World Class and all that stuff from 81, 82, and you see really early, and Crockett, you see some early Terry Taylor, and, you know, Terry Taylor, and this is a lot of, he's a very polarizing guy. I never realized this until I was listening to a lot of podcasts. Terry Taylor was never a bad wrestler, but Terry Taylor was like a glass of water. You know, he was kind of there, he's okay, he's good in the ring, but that's probably about it. You know what I mean? Kurt Hennig is a lot like, what Kurt Hennig is a lot like what one of the two members of the Rockers would be down the line. He just had that it. Like, Kurt Hennig just had that look like he's a fucking star. He's like Savage, you know, a guy who just walks in and goes, I'm the shit, you know. And even though he had the weird, you know, AWA tights and everything, it's hard to say. I mean, he just had that something that Terry Taylor didn't. And that's pretty much it. This match and the gimmicks that they were fighting for, in essence, was about more than just being in the ring and being good in the ring. This was about the extra something. And Terry Taylor, good worker, just didn't have that extra something that Kurt Hennig did. Mm-hmm. Simple as that. And that's why he wins this match, Steve. And this match did not need to be, 12 minutes. It didn't take barely 5 minutes for us to figure out who was the guy that was going to, that should have got over and who's the guy that didn't. So no problem here. Oh, and I gave it I got to go to my thing here. I gave it a star and a half.
Yeah, I gave it a star. They kind of just go back on the crowd, but yeah, it was weird. It's like at one point they all have like their backs to the match, and they're chanting they're chanting the goodbye song. I think somebody had to have been getting ejected, that was kind of funny to see.
It was a real bitter AWA fan mad at Kurt Hennig jumping ship or something.
wouldn't be surprising. But yeah, it's hearing Foley mentioned on the commentary about how these guys were in the running for the gimmick and how he tries to kind of defend that Taylor would have been fine in the gimmick. I'm sorry, I don't see it. Just looking at the two of them in the ring together, you can see easily that Henning outclasses Taylor in every single category. Just no question whatsoever. And again, I know that you guys talked about it last week, how it seems like not a lot of people are fans of Taylor. The guy's just so – Scott actually made a good analogy about it. He's a glass of water. He's not –
I don't know if he's even a glass of water. A glass of water is like ad service. I don't know what he even is. He's just,
You just look at Kurt Hennig, you just think that guy's going to be something special. Mm-hmm. We'll obviously talk about it down the line. He was already something special with the AWA. That's why they snatched him up. And the match was fine. Basic work. Again, like I said, Hennig pretty much outclasses Taylor every way and wins fairly simply. 5 minutes was fine. It didn't need to go much longer. And they're obviously the right guy went over.
Yeah. I think Taylor is, he's like if Hennig had stopped evolving is what Taylor is. He's just like six levels of evolution behind Hennig. Just basics, fine, just nothing beyond that. So, all right, let's get to our
and
next.
And anyway, didn't a couple of years down the line, Terry Taylor would be the tailor-made man in WCW. Wouldn't that be his attempt to be this gimmick, I guess? Yeah. We saw what happened there, so.
All right, next up we have another WrestleMania 4 rematch as Ravishing Rick Rude takes on Jake the Snake Roberts, and ever since after Mania, the feud has been red hot thanks to Rick Rude putting the moves on old Cheryl Roberts, Jake's wife. Jake does not wait for an intro. He charges down the aisle and attacks Rude as he's posing. Jake's a man possessed is battering the shit out of Rude until Rick finally rolls outside. Rude punches his way into control, starts to pose and waste time, which gives Jake a seam to nearly hook the DDT. Jake chases Rude around the ring, gets caught coming back in, and Rude gets worked over again, gets to work again. Graham calls Rude a sick, sick man, which was funny. Rude is showing some good offense, working heavy strikes, also targeting the arm. Rude goes to a chin lock as Graham says Rude is disgusting. There are kids in the crowd, and Tony should reprimand him for his behavior. Rude works in and out of the chin lock as Graham says it's a wear down hold, not a submission hold. Jake powers up and lands this heavy shot, but runs into a boot on a charge as Al talks about how this feud has really gotten brewing. Rude keeps missing in his preening with his hard strikes and keeps it almost costing him. Rude clubs away and taunts a snake, but Jake starts to bow up and call out Rude before peppering him with punches. Rude just slugs him down and heads up top, but Jake trips him and he ends up crotched. Jake heats up on offense, buries a knee left to drop Rude. Rude blocks a DDT by grabbing the ropes, but then Jake yanks Rude's tights down to show his ass, and that gets a big pop, and Al's just like giggling like a little girl before mowing him down with a short clothesline. Jake hooks the DDT, but Rude yanks down the ref, and Jake DDTs Rude onto the ref, which is really a unique and cool-looking spot. It's not something we've really seen before. Jake clotheslines Rude to the floor, rustles up the ref. Rude tries to leave, but Jake hunts him down and batters him out there until a double count out. Rude posts Jake and celebrates, which makes Al giggle again. Jake unleashes Damien and gets in on Rude while punching him. Rude eventually wrestles the snake off, and that was fun too. The snake is really wrapped around him pretty tight. Rude is like, you know, wiggling on the ground with him wrapped on him. Fine match, some good heat, a few nice spots, but Rude's control segments are still real long and sluggish. The chin locks are too long, and that's what keeps these matches from going next level. It's just how slow and sluggish they all have been. So the finish was fine to keep the feud going. I was surprised they didn't just do DQ to Rude for pulling the ref down. I thought that was interesting. They went double count out. But again, these guys feel like they had the potential to do so much more, but for whatever reason, they just cannot get it done out there. So 2.5 on this one, Steve.
Yeah, I went 2.5 as well. I agree. It was, you know, solid for what it was, but yeah, maybe a little bit too long. Rude, he's got like his character down like to a T. Like he's so good at that, but it's like his work in the ring doesn't seem to be getting it completely, which is weird for a guy that has the level of experience that he has. And I mean, thankfully the crowd's been into the match just because Jake is so freaking over. You know, you talk about guys like Beefcake and Duggan who are, you know, potential IC contenders. You got to throw Jake in there too as a, you know, guy that the fans just love. And they, you know, and obviously playing into the fact of Rude, you know, trying to put the moves on his wife, you know, just gave him even more sympathy. And, you know, the double count out, you know, like you said, it probably would have been easier to just DQ Rude for pulling the ref in the way of the DDT, which was a pretty good counter, but it's fine. Honestly, like you said, they want the feud to continue. And it's kind of funny. It's like for as long as the match was, it seems like the most work Rude did was when he was trying to get the snake off of him. At least I thought. And, you know, Lord Alfred's like trying to say like, okay, now get it off. And Graham's like, no, keep it on. Let it strangle him. He's like,
right, let him die.
Like, yeah, you're advocating murder there, dude.
Well, we can't have him corrupting the minds of young children with the, with his gyrating. We need to have him die via snake.
Yeah. But like you said, it was fine. You know, you're just, for being as long as it was, it should have been a lot hotter and a lot faster paced. And for it to just grind to a halt there in the middle just really hurt what could have been a pretty good match, just made it a decent match.
I gave it 2 stars. Longest match of the night, 15:44. And I had a lot of problems with this because – this match has been a blood feud for months. The guy's going after his wife. And instead of it being like, yeah, Jake did go in fast and everything, but this match should have been a lot more violent, a lot more chaos, a lot more strikes. Instead, we're getting headlocks and slow, boring rest holds. Mm-hmm. And this isn't just some random match or two guys who want a belt. It's a blood feud between a guy who's trying to take another guy's wife. You know, it was not booked right. It was booked like just another match. They booked it almost the same as the Mania match. But the feud has evolved since the end of March. But apparently the matches have been. So I was very disappointed in this match. Very disappointed. I was expecting something a little more violent, a little more, physical. And we didn't get that because it wasn't booked like that. It was booked like just another match. And sometimes some of these matches are not just another match, particularly when you're – Savage and DiBiase's not just another match, and that's not a paint-by-numbers feud anymore. This match is not a paint-by-numbers feud anymore either. And the match did not reflect that, and that's kind of upsetting, particularly for two guys who were – and I know you and I, JR, early on have kind of criticized Rude. He's not been, you know, the greatest shakes thus far. But he could brawl when he needs to, and – it's not happening, and it needs to, particularly with a feud like this. And we've already heard the card at SummerSlam. Why don't these two just wrestle again instead of what they do at SummerSlam? We'll get more into that in a couple weeks. But I don't know if you guys agree with me or not, but I just feel like this feud deserved a better match than what we got on this night. This match should have been more violent. It should have had more strikes. It should have been more chaotic. And instead we get boring rest holds and, I'll see you, the guy who tried to take my wife. I'll put you in a chin lock. I mean, come on. Just keep punching him in the face.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. It probably should have been more to it.
There should have been more to it than this. It's not just the two of them wrestling for the first time ever. You know what I mean? The ending, I don't mind. If you want a double count out, if you don't want a definitive end and you're moving this feud along, fine. I'm okay with that. But the match itself needed to have more of what the feud is and what the promos are than just some match. At WrestleMania, they were wrestling for the belt. They were in the tournament. That's one thing. But not just a paint-by-numbers match, because it's just them. You know, I just was expecting something more storytelling-wise than what we got.
Yeah.
I feel like we got some, you know, bleh, you know.
I'm with you. There could have been more to it. And, yeah, it's going to continue. And, you know, I don't know if they just figured that, like, at Mania, they were best equipped to go from the 15 to eat up the time on the card. So there's a lot of eerie similarities between this card and Mania, honestly. And that's one of them, just that they were given all the time to fill 15 minutes. And for the second time this year, all they deliver is just a kind of drawn out, boring match that doesn't really ever get going. So it's kind of funny how those two mirrored each other.
No, I agree.
All right.
Yeah.
Let's roll on as Sam Houston jigs his way out to take on King Haku.
God.
And we are just way too late into the night for this nonsense. Houston dances around like a goof until Haku makes his regal arrival. Mooney says Haku is more focused and intense these days as he attacks Sam at the bell. We get a wild double cross body spot, which is pretty cool. Houston wins and gets one. Haku bails, but when he returns, he's still off kilter as Houston's working the arm. Haku lands a stiff kick to the throat and then slings Sam up into the bottom rope to fully gain control. Haku kicks and chops away before leveling Sam with a clothesline before going to a trap hold. Haku drops his head and Sam hits a sloppy knee. Haku slams Sam, but whiffs on an elbow drop. We get an awkward exchange, and Haku hits a thrust kick and drops a headbutt for the win. Nothing to see here, and I will say, we haven't seen too much King Haku, but he's not really rocking the world so far out here. Both of his matches have been kind of blah. Couple of decent moments, but nothing more. I went half a star on this one, Scott. It was, at this point of the show, was not a welcome sight. It was just like, oh, do we need fucking Sam Houston right now at all? And Haku just is not, you know, carrying these guys at all either. So it's just, this was just real boring. And this was the second match. Even though you're trying to push Haku, this is the second match I would have definitely cut. This, along with Poffo Neidhart, for sure could have gone.
Well, what's worse is, Houston was a backup. This was originally supposed to be JYD and Haku. Could you imagine that kind of slog we would have gotten? Your match time 5:04. If JYD wasn't going to wrestle, we might as well just skip the match.
Right,
just
dump
this
it.
Fucking
yeah.
loser in here. this is just dreadful shit.
Yeah, that would have been even worse. JYD Haku.
Yeah, that would have been even worse. And. Haku, I think, is still trying to get his feet wet in this role as king. He hasn't wrestled singles in a couple of years, so he may not totally be in the groove. But I don't know, Steve. I don't even know why this. If JYD was not going to wrestle, why even get a sub? Just fucking skip it. Yeah. At this point.
Yeah. You're right. I went half star on this one. I mean. I don't know how much better it would have been if JYD was there. I mean, I get why they thought they had to put it on. They want to give Haku, you know, a big win on such a big show. And, you know, as Houston's not good, but I mean, he tried. He sold at least well for Haku, but the crowd could care less. They were dead for this match, and that's where having to drag through that 16 minutes of Jake and Rude to have to see, you know, Houston bumble around for 5 minutes just wasn't a good sight. And,
no.
You know, not again, you know, gives Haku a win, you know, furthers him along as the king, but really it's just, yeah, if you're not going to use, if JYD is not going to be there, don't put the match on. It's not worth it.
It wasn't worth it even with JYD. So. All right. It's not wasting more time on that. So let's get to our next match, and this is a bigger one, one of the really highly featured matches, both for promotion and then later, obviously, like you mentioned earlier, Scott, on the front of the VHS box. and that is a rematch again from MSG, as the Ultimate Warrior takes on Bobby Heenan in a weasel suit match. Heenan still dealing with Warrior in that suit. Warrior stomps around, teases Heenan with the same with the suit just like he did MSG as the Brain paces around outside. Al stumbles to explaining how this came to be as Heenan keeps stalling. Moody kind of puts him on the spot. He's like, Al, tell us how we get to this point. And, well, Bobby Heenan and Ultimate Warrior. And he's like, try to explain the fucking feud. He's got like no clue.
Yeah, thanks, Sean. Thanks, Moody.
Yeah, like, he's like, and he opened an open challenge, and the Ultimate Warrior came out, and like he's just trying to do whatever he can to get through it. Al then says Bobby's carrying extra poundage around the waist. Warrior finally fetches Bobby, chokes away before shoving him in the ring. Warrior batters Bobby around as Graham says Bobby's body has lost its physique. That's like the... That's like almost worse than calling him fat. His body has completely lost its physique. Has no physique at all. Just a blob. Heenan pulls an object out of his tights and jabs at Warrior's throat. Heenan uses it a couple more times with some good healing. Warrior just shrugs his off, starts to beat on Bobby again, smacking him around and shooting him hard to the corner a pair of times. Bobby just bumps all around until Warrior gets a sleeper for the win. He stuffs Bobby into the suit as Graham, Al, and Mooney all rip on him. Heenan wakes up and stooges around to work out of the suit, which the crowd loves. And basically just the MSG match, but it felt a little more abridged and choppy than that one was. And the heat was good, but not as focused as we saw back in New York. So a little step back. It's fine for what it was. Warriors launching his feud with Heenan. We're keeping him warm for a little bit. And we get to see Bobby humiliated after he had his, cock up since WrestleMania with his couple wins. So I went a half a star on this one, Steve. Just, not a ton going on here.
I went half a star too. First off, talk about we actually didn't see it, but talk about random appearances. The Crusher apparently was the ring announcer for this match. Where the hell did they drag him out from?
a bar on 8th Street.
Just a further middle finger to AWA.
Pretty much.
Yeah, pretty much. It was fine. Honestly, Bobby doing what he does best. He bombs around a bit for Warrior, then he, gets the advantage. And I don't know, where did Billy Graham come up with the idea that Bobby had a railroad spike? It was the thing that he used on Warrior. It's like, what? How do you come up with that? Like, seriously.
A railroad spike.
It's just so, oh my God. It's just so like, oh God. But obviously, like I said, just a vehicle to put the Warrior over. And obviously, Bobby flying around in the weasel suit never gets old, does what he does best. And that's pretty much the end of that.
This is classic Bobby. I gave it half a star as well. Graham didn't have an official time, but this match was probably what? Like 3.5 minutes, probably. This is just classic Bobby. And Warrior is on a trajectory right now. And we'll expound more on that, JR, in a couple weeks. But this is just classic Bobby. And apparently, in this building, some years earlier, Bobby was in the same match, apparently with the same suit, except he was wrestling Greg Gagne. And I think that's the same suit they used when he was doing the weasel suit matches in the early 80s with Greg Gagne. So it looks like this. If you go to the AWA, it looked all grizzled and beat up. If you go to like the AWA DVD and go to the extras, I think there is a Greg Gagne.
So did Bobby just own the Bobby fucking match. Suit? Like
he probably did.
Yeah. So. I think he said it. I think he said on one of the DVDs that it was his suit. So he had it with him. And honestly, the other difference there is that in the Gagne match, Gagne actually zipped it up so that Bobby couldn't get out. He would just flow around in it, whereas here, Warrior doesn't zip it up. Bobby just flows around in it before taking it off and throwing it away, which probably is even funnier than Bobby just flailing around in a zipped up suit. But
Bobby's trying to. You think Warrior's going to remember details? I mean, really?
Oh, and also
he's probably surprised he had to use a sleeper in the match.
And also, Billy Graham saying it like, I hope there's like a dragon or something or tarantula in the suit, and if you see the tail moving, that's gonna be the best part, and of course Al yucking it up, laughing hysterically.
What is Billy Graham on all this death. Let's have Bobby get bit and die from a tarantula.
It's like all Arizona animals he's talking about too. Just, you know, obviously that's where he's from, but it's just
a scorpion stings him right in his balls, Mooney.
I think that's the one animal he didn't never met. He didn't say scorpions. It's like I was waiting for him to say it, but he never did.
All right, let's get through this. So we got a few more matches left. Again, this is, I thought we were starting to wind down, but no, here comes our tag title match. Another rematch, Scott, what we saw last week or a couple weeks ago in July, MSG, mm-hmm. as the British Bulldogs challenged Demolition. This never-ending card rolls on, and Billy Graham, he's going from threatening death on Bobby to now moaning over how big Davey Boy Smith looks. He's so big, brother. Look at those arms. This is a tough night for Billy Graham. Mooney wonders where Matilda is as the champs make their way out. Bulldogs continuing to be top contenders, looking to recapture the gold. Fuji says demos were ragged before Fuji welded them into this awesome force. Al said that. Davey and Smash open up and trade some strikes until Davey grabs the arm. Dynamite tags in, gets pushed to the wrong corner. Axe comes in and just batters Dynamite with some blows. Dynamite comes back with a headbutt for two and goes to the arm. Axe turns the tide, and the champs use their power offense to batter the kid. Smash goes to a chin lock before the champs start pulverizing. Graham asks Al if he would manage the Bulldogs, and Al says he's considered it, but he would make them change their tactics to ruthless ones, like Fuji has in Demolition. Because you're English, Al, have you had any interest in managing the British Bulldogs? Yes, I have, actually.
And I would turn them heel.
Basically, he's like, I'd make them douchebags. He wants to be more devious and have killer instinct. And Graham agrees, and I guess it's hard to argue because they have been kind of stuck in mud for a couple years here. Possible. Davey, where are we at here? Smash goes to bear hug. Davey breaks up the hold, and Graham just keeps pushing Al on managing. Hayes is like laughing it off, and Graham keeps bringing it up. I think you should, Lord. I like commentating with you, but I think you should manage them. Davey gets the tag, cleans house, and the champ's getting a near fall. Axe cuts him down, but Smash whiffs on an elbow drop. Dynamite's back in. Al kind of shits on him sarcastically. Dynamite gets a snap suplex for two. Davey comes in and sends Dynamite flying into Smash with a headbutt. Axe comes in. Things break down. Dynamite hooks an octopus hold on Axe. Smash grabs a cane and blasts him and then covers and nabs the win. A fine tag title match. A step behind MSG. I did like the finish here. If you remember, Scott, that finish last show was pretty crappy. With the Rougeaus getting involved. This one's a little bit better. Demolition continues to dominate. The Bulldogs are starting to fade. 2.5 here. And, you know, the whole Al conversation made me wonder if a heel turn for the Bulldogs could have been in the cards as well. I think they could have easily pulled it off. I think they had the hard-hitting, douchey style. And you almost wonder, should they have turned, like, a year earlier after the Danny Davis stuff? Because now the heel side, like, the division is much more flush, and it's harder for them to find a niche. But could they have done it a year earlier when there was a little bit more room for some top heel teams? I know they had the stuff with the Islanders going on, but you start to wonder, like, what things could have looked like with them as heels. So I don't know if you have any thoughts on that as you talk about the match. It was just kind of running through my head as Al was talking. Scott?
7:08, your match time. Bulldog heels. That's interesting. Who would have managed them?
Alfred Hayes.
Jimmy?
Apparently.
Frenchie?
I mean, they can't really do, I don't know. I don't know who could have managed them. But, I mean, I don't know if they even needed a manager. They were fine enough. But I don't know if they had to.
Yeah, I guess. Jimmy probably would have been a good manager,
yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'll just sit on that. Maybe we'll talk about it next time we see them. I'll have to think about that. That's interesting. I never really kind of thought about that, but it's possible. When they were, you know, when the heel side was a little thin, it's possible. I like this match. Again, 7:08 your match time. I gave it 2.5. I liked it. Demolition. They weren't getting crazy. I mean, this is kind of an odd crowd, and it's tough to tell when they're, you know, when you're outdoors. But I don't know if the face pops were that big tonight as they had been, and I think they get bigger. And I think you catch them better when you're in indoor venues than you do outdoor venues. But I didn't really catch a huge babyface push tonight for them. Bulldogs are very tepid. I mean, they're pretty cooked too, like the Bees are. But I don't know. I got to think about the heel thing. Maybe the summer before you're thinking, JR? Summer, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, just basically right punting the Mania. Islanders feud. Yeah, I mean, he'd be punting the Islanders feud. I would have said you could have done it right after four, but even then now, with the division bulking up, the Rougeau's turning heel, Demolition's on top of his heel. Like, I don't know if they would have been better or not, but they are kind of stale.
No, I think they've been lost.
I mean, they're clearly stale in this role at this point, and you do wonder if, you know, what more they could have done as heels. Because I think they could have pulled it off personality and style-wise, and maybe it extends their run a little bit because they're clearly, tougher, you know, kind of lacking that killer instinct like they mentioned on commentary.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think they could have worked a little more snug, particularly Dynamite, who looks like a douche anyway. Probably would have played that role to the hilt. I don't know, Steve, what do you think? First, what do you think of the match? And secondly, what do you think of the theory about maybe a year earlier turning the Bulldogs heel?
Well, the match I gave 2.5 as well. I almost gave it 3, but I just didn't quite make it. That's a very interesting point, because I was going to say, I watching this match, it seemed like the Bulldogs were really working hard to kind of prove that they still had value, because like you said, now they're higher up than the Bees are, that's for sure, but between the Powers of Pain, Heart Foundation turning face, the Rockers coming in, they were clearly down the face ladder, and you mentioned about what if they turned heel earlier in the year, how that would have worked. But now, I mean, you've got obviously Demolition as your top heel team. You got the Rougeaus just turned. You have a team about to come in that would definitely push them down further. So heel turn, obviously, here probably wouldn't have lasted long. Had they done it a year earlier? Maybe, but considering that you spent most of the 87 having the belt on the Heart Foundation as the top heel, the Bulldogs probably would have to play second fiddle to them, which they probably didn't want to have to do if they had just turned. Plus, again, you didn't know how much longer Dynamite was going to hold up with his back, because he's trying, but you can definitely tell he's not the guy he once was. And
yeah, I think it's
picked up something.
I think it's a whole package of them. I think it's that. I think it's a great point. Dynamite's back. I think the depth of the division. And it was a throwaway conversation, but I do think the killer instinct part, like, kind of rang true. It's like they're not really going at, you know, they're not going at their opponents. I don't know. Like, you can tell, like, they almost got left behind, and they're lacking this mean streak that they needed to compete at this point. So, I think it made some really good points in there. I think of they've almost been passed by, and you almost wonder at this point, and we do get there, obviously, but, like, you know, should they have kind of pushed Dynamite out the door and tried to run with Davey as a singles? Because he can still go. He's healthy. And maybe that helps freshen things up. And we'll get there eventually. But for now, it seems like as a team, they're kind of running out of usefulness. I mean, could they have split them and had them feud maybe too? Like, I know they end up doing that, like, in, I think, the next year, just not there. So maybe they could have done something like that where Dynamite turns on Davey and brings some fresh, you know, life into them.
Yeah, maybe. I was about to say the commentary made interesting points about how it seemed like how they were saying how the Bulldogs are still trying to fight to get to the top spot, almost kind of, you know, forgetting the fact that they were champions just 2 years earlier. Mm-hmm. But obviously that just seems so far away now because they – I don't say that the reign got forgotten, but it's you do kind of almost forget that they were tag team champions for almost a year until – Dynamite got hurt, and then it just slowly started going downhill for them. They got, like you said, they got lapped by these other teams. And by this point now, between the death of the division and the health of Dynamite, it's just the clock was running down on them as a viable team in this division.
All right. Well, we got two matches left. We're going to get to here.
Yeah. There we go.
And that'll do it for that match. So, up next is when this one came out, I'm like, oh my God, there's another match before the main event. I was so fucking done. And that is Dino Bravo taking on Ken Patera. Bravo at this point in the night is just torture. I mean, just torture. Patera chugs out and goes right at Dino, unloading elbows and choking him with his own jacket. Patera keeps slugging away and then slams Dino for two. Patera drops his head and gets kicked, and Bravo hits an atomic drop and drops an elbow for choking away. Patera comes back with a clothesline, hits a back elbow for two, gets another close near fall on an inside cradle, but whiffs on a charge and eats a clothesline. Bravo gets a side suplex for the win. Again, Patera looks fine. He's full of energy out there, but Bravo's awkward and choppy and stumbles around. Just a showcase for Bravo, nothing else. And, you know, fuck Bravo. Patera should be the one winning this match and getting some kind of push, because he at least looks decent out there. And he has looked decent. And he's definitely a guy, he's on my list of guys I've kind of been won over by watching these. You know, early Honky, Hercules, you know, and a few others we've talked about. He's up there too for me. Is guys that I've come to appreciate a bit more due to his fire and energy. But the match itself is just dog shit for the most part. So I went half a star for Kenny's fire. But Bravo's lost, Steve.
Yeah, unfortunately, this gets the big old dud from me. This was definitely the worst match of the night. That's including the few squashes we had earlier. You're right, Dino Bravo's terrible. I mean, he's basically getting by just on his look. And... yeah, Patera, he's trying, but I think by this point, you could tell that he probably was starting to run out of gas too, which is why he's unfortunately jobbing here to Bravo, because they saw Bravo as the brighter star. I don't know why, but yeah, it's not good. It's not good. That's really all I have to say.
Make it quick, Scott.
Yeah, 3:28 your match time. I think Patera should have won only because I think he was another AWA guy that they wanted to showcase in the AWA country. But Dino Bravo is just a gigantic pile of nothing. He doesn't even know how to sell. He doesn't know how to do anything. He's just a mess. Too much pharmacy trips.
All right.
That's about it. So, done. Main event.
All right, let's finally get to our main event, and it is a big one. And we've made it, guys. We've made it here. Hulk Hogan taking on Andre the Giant inside of a steel cage. Main event time as a few takes his final breaths here over the next month, draining every ounce out of it. Even though both men have been diverted a bit, here we are back at it. Andre and Bobby are great. They come out again, just gaze into the crowd with those cocky, evil glares that we talked about, Scott, last month. Andre checks the crowd, checks the cage as the crowd chants for Hulk, and then they go batshit when Hogan comes out and power walk to the ring. Andre chokes Hogan immediately to start using his hands and Hulk's shirt, as Graham reminds us that anything goes. Hogan battles back with punches, and Al asks for clarification on how to win this match, and Mooney explains it. Hogan chokes away with his boot while standing on the top rope in a cool spot. Andre survives and ends up tying Hulk to the cage, using a shirt wrapped around his neck. Andre chops away and makes a break for the door, but Hulk breaks free and blocks him, and then batters the Giant with knees to the face. Billy says this is a gruesome fight, as Andre locks in a bear hug from his knees. That was neat, too. Hogan breaks free and tries to escape, but Andre pops up and slugs him back down. Andre drops an elbow, but Hulk battles up and goes to a standing chin lock. Andre rips off the turnbuckle pad as Hulk is yanking on his head in a fun bit. Graham questions that, though, saying he can just use the cage as a weapon. Why is he bothering with the turnbuckle? But it works as Andre grabs Hogan and spikes him to the exposed corner twice. And the crowd is rabid for Hogan, and God bless them after sitting through this fucking crowd and still being this awake through this card. Hogan is sliced open. Andre bites the cut as he batters him. Andre keeps on the pressure as Hulk rattles him with a desperate clothesline. Andre staggering around and unloads until the Giant falls to a knee and then eventually crumbles to the mat. Hogan hits a leg drop, but Bobby comes in and goes at Hogan as he tries to leave. Hogan smacks Brain around, and as Andre starts to scale a cage, Hogan slugs him down. Andre gets tied in the ropes. Hogan whips Bobby to the wall of the cage, and the crowd is going crazy. Hulk scales the cage as Al says he wants to win the spectacular way by climbing out. Hogan wins, and the crowd's going wild. A hell of a brawl. One of the best matches, honestly. And if you take away, like, WrestleMania 3, like, you know, what it represented from a pure match standpoint, I think this might be their best one, honestly. The atmosphere is top-notch. The brawling style with the cage helped. It didn't overstay its welcome. It didn't slow down. There was some really cool, unique, aggressive spots. Andre, you can tell since the back surgery, has been feeling better because this stuff has been better here in 88. And Hogan wins again. Andre's working down the ladder, and just a long night, but a strong finish to it. I really liked this match. I went 3 stars. It's kind of the forgotten, hidden Hogan-Andre classic that you never hear about. But I would put this, I mean, it's hard to say it's better than 3, so whatever. But it's right behind 3 as their best work together. I really, really liked it. I liked it better than the main event, which I really liked, Scott, when we watched that earlier in the year. So what'd you think of this one?
Your match time, 10:03 in this main event. I gave this 3.5 stars. Mm-hmm. I thought it was awesome. And like I said, two things. Number one, when I talked about these two pairing off, the Hogan Savage and DiBiase Andre, you had the two perfect pair in the earlier match, and you had the two in this one. This one had to finally end.
Yeah.
And now it has.
Well, not quite.
Sort of. Between the two of them, maybe personally, it's mm-hmm. ended. And number two, I think that's the reason why they didn't have to rush the SummerSlam main event tonight. Right. I think we needed a definitive last match between Hogan and Andre. And putting it in a steel cage in front of a huge crowd outdoors, I think was perfect. Now we can focus on the combination of the two, you know, the Mega Bucks and the – I don't know if the name's been used yet, but we won't talk about it till after the fact. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's why I think they didn't dump the main event. That's why I think they didn't rush the main event for SummerSlam here, because I think they wanted DiBiase and Savage and Hogan and Andre to have their last definitive singles matches. I think that's what you get here. And Hogan seems very refreshed. Remember, I don't know if he's actually wrestled before this, or if he's truly been off,
right?
Since WrestleMania, or since that that Superstars match he had with Boris Zukov or whatever, which means he's been gone, you know, close to 3 months. He looks rejuvenated, and there's that moment. You know, you're talking about JR, and we've said it about Bobby and Andre just knowing what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
There's one moment where Andre goes up the steps and he's leaning on the door and he just looks up, and behind him is the darkness from the ballpark and everything. And it's just – Andre just gets it or got it. He just knew it. Just setting it up, just look at that with that smug look on his face. In his eyes, Hogan has never beaten him clean. In his eyes. It's just awesome on top, from top to bottom. And the match was really good. And Hogan gets the big win. I think it shuts the door on their singles feud. But, of course, we still have other stuff to do. And then we're out, thank God. What do you think, Steve?
Yeah, I agree. I went 3.5 as well. I really love this match. I hadn't seen it in a while, so I wasn't sure what to expect. And it was awesome. I mean, just like you said, just Andre's presence was just so amazing. Like, He owned this moment.
Yep.
And he knew it too. And like you said, you know, Hogan, the fans clearly were thrilled to have Hogan back, even though they had, you know, gotten behind Savage as a champion. They knew they still loved Hogan completely. So they gave him the big, you know, hero's welcome when he comes back. I agree that this was a perfect way to end the singles feud between these two. And between Savage and DiBiase, so you can focus all your energy now on the tag match. Andre was just so vicious in this match. I remember a couple of great moments. Obviously, him throwing those stiff chops at Hogan while he's tied up by the shirt to the cage mm-hmm. was awesome. Using the turnbuckle, you know, the exposed buckle to bust Hogan open, and then just biting him on the cut, just so ruthless. And then obviously the awesome point of the match was Andre actually scaling the cage, which had to be, you know, you just had to almost take a double take of that. It's like, what? Is he actually climbing that damn cage? It's like, you're like, just hope that the cage is like reinforced 20 times over. Yeah. I like to have this vision that Vince told the crew, is like, okay, we got this big spot planned. And just make sure that, like, he didn't tell him what was going to happen. He's like, we got this big spot plan. Just make sure the cage is reinforced. And they're like, okay. And then when they saw Andre climbing, they're like, oh, crap. Did you really make sure that cage is secured? Because you notice at the beginning when Hogan came out, he does his usual thing. He's like, he's shaking the cage on the outside. When he goes around to the side that Andre was going to climb, he didn't do that because he obviously didn't want to screw anything up with it and, you know, get Andre hurt. And And obviously, you know, and Hogan winning was fine. And it was funny that, you know, he climbs over the top of the cage and he goes on, he does on the side that the door's on, which is funny. But obviously, you know, Al makes up for it. He's like, he's taking the spectacular way out.
So. Someone's winning the spectacular way.
Yeah. But yeah, just an awesome match. And God bless the crowd, man. After the night they've had to endure to keep the energy up throughout this whole thing, just was so amazing. And 10 minutes was nice and tidy for both guys, and just a great end to a very, very, very long night of action.
It was a long night, but yeah, they were rewarded. The two top matches were real good here. It just sucks that the rest of the card is such a slog to get through, unfortunately. but what we do get in the top two, great. And yes, this is definitely the forgotten Hogan Andre Classic for sure. So here's what, hang on a sec, I had it right here. So actually a couple bits. So this is Hogan's first match since he fought Boris Zukov at the April 21st New Haven taping that aired on May 14th. He did have one match before this, and that's on July 13th taping, him and Randy Savage against the Conquistadors, that would air on TV after this. I'm sorry, he didn't wrestle, I apologize. He was with Savage, as Savage fought the Conquistador 1, that was in La Crosse, Wisconsin on July 13th. So yeah, this is his first match since that April taping. He's back here, he looked good. I mean, he didn't, you know, look like he missed a beat, Scott, like you said. And Andre's, like I said, looked good since the back surgery too, so... The stars aligned for them tonight to have a really good match, and it was great to see them cap off, you know, one last time with a classic before they wrap their feud up. So WrestleFest, the VHS tape, featured 10 matches. It had the Rougeaus versus the Bees, Bad News versus Brett, Doug and Honky, Powers of Pain Bolsheviks, Neidhart Poffo was left in, Jake Roode, The Weasel Suit, Demolition Bulldogs, Bravo Patera, and Hogan Andre. So you're missing Taylor Hennig, Boss Man Casey, Beefcake Herc,
and Savage DiBiase.
So,
and Haku Houston.
So five of the 15 were left off.
Why in the name of God would they leave that fucking Neidhart match in?
Well, I'm surprised
they didn't put him over. How do you leave Savage DiBiase off that thing? I mean, I know you want to highlight Hogan Andre, but you tell me you can't put Savage DiBiase on there, even if you cut it down a little bit?
Yeah, yeah, I'm surprised. I wonder what the reasoning was behind that.
That's insane.
Yeah, but at the very least, why put Neidhart? Like, I'm surprised they didn't put the Boss Man match, because at least you're showcasing Boss Man, you know?
Ludicrous.
Yeah.
Ugh.
So, on that fucking Dino Bravo slog.
Oh, God.
Yeah, what the, like, horrible. What the hell?
Fucking horrible.
Now right. I know why they haven't put this show on the network yet.
Yeah, well, that too. I mean, you think it would go up at some point under the specials. It's odd that they haven't. I'm sure they have the full thing, but even if they just wanted to do the Coliseum video version, right, which may go up in the Coliseums, I guess. All right, let's go through our awards real quick here before we wrap up. So match of the night, it was a close call. I mean, I had Savage DiBiase to me was a touch better, but I really liked Hogan Andre. But for me, I go Savage DiBiase. That would be their one... One, two, three, four. This would be their sixth match of the night that we've given Scott since that series. Every time they've won it. Do you agree?
I agree. Yes, absolutely.
Steve?
Yep.
I'm actually going to go against the grain and go Hogan Andre. I mean, Savage DiBiase was great, but I did like Hogan Andre just slightly better than that one.
All right, so that's our first split. Saturday Night's Main Event back in March. I went Hogan Race, actually, and you and Peter went Savage DiBiase, Scott. So this is my fifth Savage DiBiase match of the night. Mm-hmm. All right, the Cousin Jr. for the worst match of the night. And for back-to-back shows, I'm giving it to Haku. Last month was Haku SD Jones, and now we get Haku versus Sam Houston. Do you guys agree?
Oh, God. Fucking Patera Bravo was pretty cool. I got to give it to that. That was just.
I feel like Patera Bravo is just a touch shorter in Patera's energy. Like, Haku Houston was just sloppy.
I know Kenny worked his ass off, but Dino Bravo's just fucking horrendous. So horrendous. Oh, God. That's the only dud I gave. I got to go. I mean, Kenny was fine. He really was, but I got to give it to them. Dino Bravo just totally destroyed that. I think maybe that's why. Ugh. I don't know. What do you think, Steve?
Yeah, I have to agree. I mean, I gave Neidhart Poffo a dud, but that was, you know, 2.5 minute squash. That was nothing. Yeah, but Bravo Pateros is not good. I mean, Houston tried, but and Haku did what he could. I mean, that's not that good, but I thought Bravo Patero was worse.
All right. The Hogan Award for MVP. I'm going to split on this. I'm going Hogan and Andre. I thought Savage DiBiase had the slightly better match, but to me, Hogan and Andre kind of steal the night with that main event. The crowd was so into it. They were both working their asses off, and it was such a great moment. Andre continues to be dominant since, you know, really the beginning of the year with our MVP award, Scott. Won a ton of them since January. That first time where he comes out and just looks out to the crowd. He's won 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. This will be a seventh, at least, share of MVP of the night for us. What did you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, Andre standing on the steps, looking up with that just look of disdain is just perfect. It's absolutely perfect. And Hogan, again, a lot of energy. He's back in the mix. Yeah, I mean, Savage DiBiase was just a great match, but Hogan Andre had that little extra something. So I agree. I'll go with the two of them.
Yeah, I was going to just go Andre, but I agree. I had to go with you guys. Hogan definitely held up his end of the bargain, and they just put on a really – for I think a match not a lot of people expected to be any good, they delivered a great performance.
All right, the Uncle Elmer for the worst wrestler of the night, and I went Dino Bravo here, so he does get an award from me. And actually, you know, guys, this would be his first that we've given him. He won at the Rumble, but he didn't wrestle at the Rumble. So this is his first, right? Or was he in the Rumble? Or no, he just did the weightlifting, right?
No, he just did weightlifting.
Yeah, so this would be his first, like, due to a match, which is kind of surprising. Actually, D'Amato gave him worst at WrestleMania, but for me and you, Scott, we have not given him worst wrestler, but he gets to hear from me tonight. He was clearly the worst out there.
He was absolutely unwatchable. Absolutely unwatchable.
Right, yeah, I will definitely third that. Sam Houston's close, but not as bad as Bravo.
Yeah, I had Houston penciled in until the Bravo match. All right, moment of the night. I went with Savage pinning DiBiase. I love the psychology of it. DiBiase gives him kind of that brief glimmer, and Savage nabs the inside cradle on the crowd. This reaction was great. And it just caps off the feud the whole way it's been going, as that Savage just keeps being one pace ahead of DiBiase the whole time. So that was my favorite moment, Scott.
Mine as well. Show that Savage is a boss, owns the ring when he's in it, and he owns the belt that he has it. So I agree.
I'm going to be the odd one out on this one again. I actually went with Andre climbing the cage. Mm-hmm. It was just such a great holy crap moment. It's like, because you never expected it.
Right.
Savage getting the win on DiBiase was a great moment and got a great pop. I also wanted to give honorable mention to Bobby Flynn around in the weasel suit, just doing what he does best. Yep. But I definitely have to, I definitely think that just seeing that moment of Andre scaling that cage was just one you never thought you would see.
Well, Andre's had a, like, you don't think about Andre's 88 that much, but man, he has had a hell of a year. I mean, he is all over these awards from MVP and best moment. It's just him all year, and you don't think of 88 being like a big Andre year, because when you just think pay-per-views, you know, it's like you don't picture it. But he's really been great the whole time. All right, the Morocco Award. Donnie Boy's not here, so we're going to have a rare non-Morocco winner. And on this evening, I had some...
She gives it the Warlord since since Billy Graham wanted to. So
I had some... Well, I did have some competition. The Warlord is up there. The British Bulldogs are up there. Hogan's obviously always in the conversation, but I thought Bravo was, and Warrior, of course, in the discussion. But I thought Bravo was the most jacked up on this night. So he gets his first, actually his second Morocco award from me. He won back in December 87. What do you have for this one, Scott?
Bravo doesn't even like jacked. He's just fucking bloated and full of shit.
Where do you think that bloating comes from?
I know, but he's not even like jet. Like, I mean, you could give it to Warrior. Even Hennig looked a little.
The juice is really flowing over the next couple of years. So.
Yeah. Fuck it. I'll give it to Bravo.
Okay. Steve.
Yeah, I have to agree. I mean, like you said, there were definitely a wealth of contenders tonight. It wasn't just the beer flowing on this night. It definitely was the juice flowing as well. But, yeah, Bravo's just – he's so misshapen. It's really bad.
All right, and our Patera Award for worst hair of the night. Kenny's on the show, so to me it's an easy call, and that's Ken Patera. You guys agree?
Yes, but Lanny's was pretty yes. close. His hair's just getting worse and worse.
It is.
But if Kenny's in the building, he gets it.
All right.
Yeah, Go ahead,
Steve. I'm sorry.
No, I was about to say, yeah, I'll go Patero. Though sneaky favorite for me, at least, Boss Man, his hair is not looking too good either.
Yeah, it's weird flat top.
Yeah, that flat top's getting a little out of control. He's yeah. trimmed.
All right, final grade of the night out of 10. Not a good show. Honestly, one of the worst we've seen. Maybe, you know, the only one that's been worse, I think, this year was that January 88 house show. Scott, I gave a 2.5 to that. I went 3 out of 10 here, and the only thing that saves it are the two big matches. The rest were crap. WrestleMania, I gave a 4, which I think had a little bit better around it because of the tournament and the hype. But this was like just a poor man's version of WrestleMania 4, which is not somewhere you want to be in 88. So 88 has been a weird year. Like, I feel like the MSGs and like the week-to-week stuff that we've seen, the month-to-month, like, has been real good. But the big shows just have not delivered. We'll see if that changes with SummerSlam. I guess the Rumble wasn't bad, but we'll see if that changes with SummerSlam, because the big stuff has not really come through yet so far for us here in 88. Steve, what did you have this one at?
I went 3.5. That basically is carried by the two big matches. Thank God for them, because without those two matches, I mean, this is – you could be looking at easily
right.
one of, if not the worst shows we've done. I mean, it wasn't all terrible. I mean, yeah, I had a couple decent matches. Like the tag title match was fine. Rude Jake was fine. But yeah, just all the squashes and the just unnecessary matches. Mm-hmm. It's a very bloated show with so many matches. It definitely makes 4 look like a walk in the park just trying to get to it. Now, obviously, 4 didn't have, you know, the big match like this show had. Obviously, Savage DiBiase here and Hogan Andre blows anything 4 had out of the water. But just the in-between stuff just was not enough to carry it.
Yeah, I mean, it's when you look at grade-wise, it's definitely one of the worst we've given, you know, outside of a couple of house shows. But it's definitely the worst big show grade. And what did you say you went with, Steve?
3.5, okay. 3.5.
And Scott, what do you got?
Well, let's see. I mean, I gave the I gave that January house show mm-hmm. a 3, which is 1/2 grade higher than you. I gave the February house show a 4, and this was worse than that. I'm gonna have to give this a 3.5 too.
Okay.
The top two matches were good. The demolition in Bulldogs was not horrendous. But like of the 15 matches, I would say maybe 9 of them were just unwatchable trash.
Yeah.
And a couple were good but could have been better. And then you had the two main events, which were really, really good. So
thank God Hogan and Andre delivered. Yeah. I mean, you knew that.
Yeah.
You knew that Savage DiBiase would deliver, but you know, you didn't know for sure that Hogan would. So thankfully that did.
So
all right.
3.5. Mm-hmm.
So let's put a bow on this one. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time. And that'll be episode 499. It'll be the Tuesday night. Scott, we'll be off on the Monday. I'll be back in 2 weeks on a Tuesday. D'Amato will be here looking at SummerSlam 88. And that'll be our final episode before the big episode 500 extravaganza coming on 9/24. Again, if you went in on the trivia, let us know between now and 9/11. Because after that, the pool will close as we finalize the trivia. So if you want in, get in. The episode of 500 Madness. A few things at PlayStation.com. I already mentioned the greatest song of the 80s tournament. Be sure to check that out. Of course, Steve's Vintage Wall previewing dropped today, and you can hear his thoughts there as well, as you heard here. Hulk Hogan Andre the Giant, that hits the day of our show every 2 weeks. You can peep that. We had a new episode of Survey Says on Road Wild 99 dropped, and keeping with the Road Wild theme, Steve, you and I were included in the group watch champions piece that'll drop on Tuesday looking at Road Wild 98. Not much better than the show that we talked about tonight. So be sure to read that on Tuesday. And of course, every Wednesday you can read Stacey O'Loughlin's Divas Deep Dive. She's been on a hot streak. You can read all about Lay Cool in last week's edition and to see if you get the same Breaking Bad feels that I got off of that story. She'll be back again this Wednesday with another installment. Our new excellent W Network Adventure relaunched, kind of refreshed group looking at Roddy Piper's Greatest Hits Coliseum Home Video. You can see that every other week here at PlayStation Nation as well. Much more to go here, written and audio. Of course, we had a new Wrestling Warzone hit the PlayStation Wrestling feed as well. Me and Chad looked at the October 30th, 1995 Raw Nitro. And one other thing I'll plug is just a new episode of Jeff Learns Wrestling hit as well. We did that on the road back from NXT Brooklyn. It was Jeff's first real live experience as a wrestling fan, and he shares all about that. We went through the show, so check that out. It's from the car, and I think it came pretty good. So that's all on the PlayStation Wrestling feed. Scott, you had a new main event last week as well, right?
A new main event did drop. The guys, I was not there, but Nate, Steve, Jordan Duncan talked about SummerSlam and last weekend, and then Pete joined them to talk a little New Japan. And coming up on the site, written-wise, next week, probably check it out, probably Tuesday, after a one-year hiatus, myself and the great Logan Crosland will be returning with Campus Hot Takes.
All right,
as the first big weekend of college football returns this week with some huge games, Notre Dame playing Michigan, I think Virginia Tech, Florida State, and a couple others. So stay tuned for that. Probably next Tuesday you'll see that drop. Myself and Logan, the premier column for the year of Campus Hot Takes. So check that out.
And I'll also mention the PTBN Pop feed. We had our debut, really, of our PlayStation Sports Network series, College Football 2018 preview,
yes,
with Nick Duke, Greg Phillips, and Andrew Reich came through to look down the Power 5 conferences. And our NFL preview will be coming soon as well over the next week or so. So be sure to check out that feed. We'll have more sports content as we reach the fall and we continue to evolve. Steve, anything you got to plug?
Well, you already mentioned the Vince Wall previewing that did drop today. Hogan Andre, I looked at. Do that every 2 weeks. Later this week, should drop the next edition of the Box Office Report, looking at August 2008. Kind of a tepid month to end what really was a pretty hot summer through 2008. Saw some big films released throughout that summer. You had the first Iron Man. You had The Dark Knight, WALL-E. Fourth Indiana Jones movie. It was pretty hot, and the August slate of films just kind of ground all that to a halt, unfortunately, which I will delve more into on that. Like I said, should drop later this week. And other than that, looking forward to coming back in a month for 500.
All right, we'll see you here. Good luck in the tournament.
Yes.
A lot of stiff competition you'll be up against. So, of course, you are a veteran of our PlayStation Trivia tournaments. So. All right, so that's it. Follow us on facebook.com/PlayStation, place number 2B Nation on Twitter, shoplist, PlayStation.com/Amazon, and as well, check out our Vintage Vault ebooks available on the right hand side of our site. Click that and you can go ahead and download them absolutely free. Subscribe to all of our feeds, PlayStation Wrestling, PlayStation Pop, and Pro Wrestling Only. And with that said, Scott, we'll be back in 2 weeks' time, episode 499. Talk to y'all soon.
Mm-hmm. Take care. I don't ever